Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 102 of the Xbox For Gamers podcast. This week, I am joined by Keo.
Hey, everyone.
And Cameron.
Hello.
So we didn't have a show last week, so we got twice as much material to cover. So lots of questions, lots of news, lots of games. We're going to be very, very busy. If you're listening to the pre-show, we were also waxing lyrical about the fact that Black Friday is going on and we want new PCs. So make sure you subscribe to the Patreon. I'm somewhat kidding.
Yeah, I was gonna say, okay, what's our Black Friday splurges so far?
I have not bought a single thing. I've been tempted by getting like a gaming mouse maybe or something. Yeah. I don't know. I saw a really good deal on one of the wired Logitech ones. Was down from like, I think it was down to like $60, down from like 150, and I was like, "Ooh, that actually yeah. that means wired." So I was like, oh, "I'll get the wireless yeah. version." But
the G502X is really, really good. That's what I've got. Though I've got wireless one.
Is yeah. that this one?
I have the white one with RGB. So,
yeah. G502 is pretty good. Yeah.
I was thinking that was the one I was thinking about. I don't know. Yeah. It probably would be good because I'm running this. You can see this Logitech.
Wow. Yeah, that's like out of the box included USB with keyboard business. 100%.
I when I bought this PC, it didn't come with like any bits and pieces. So like I do have a pink keyboard.
I've got my wife's pink keyboard as well.
Yeah, there we
go. It matches the pink chair that you can't see at the moment.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly,
that's right. Normally on the podcast. Yeah.
So yeah, we're doing visual things to start with. So fuck you, audio listeners.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, this computer is very like I've got a Hello Kitty desk mat. I've got like a little Hello Kitty, like rest thingy. Like it's yeah. You'd be surprised thinking it's my computer. But I don't know. Like I mean, you know, most of the Black Friday sales are still happening over the weekend, right? And you know,
yeah.
so they're
doing yeah,
the whole,
they
like,
do,
Cyber
they
Monday thing.
Are.
Like they started last week anyway, so I'm still keeping it in my back pocket just in case. We'll see.
I managed to get myself a Naughty for like $50 bucks.
A Naughty, yep.
Very comfortable. And I just got myself Hot Wheels, like Hot Wheels 2, I should say, because it was like half price.
I definitely did buy some video games. I bought a bunch of games that were actually a pretty good sale on some stuff that I hadn't seen on sale for a while. So, and I haven't had a chance to play any of it this week, basically. But next week, hopefully, I'll have a bit more to talk about.
Yeah, I don't think I picked up any games or anything. There's like one or two like little things that are going in the sales. But I ended up getting the Xbox Series Elite Design Lab controller, actually. So I went for one of those. And yeah, so it looks really, really nice. I made it kind of like a Metroid Samus Aran kind of theme, basically. But yeah, it looks really, really nice. I'm quite happy with it. So yeah, you can kind of see, I think if you're on the stream, I've kind of put it in the background a bit.
Nice.
So it's like some green on yellow on the face with orange buttons. And there's kind of like a red at the top. So yeah, it's very, very nice looking. So
Metroid.
That was a good splurge. Well, it's going to be like a Christmas thing. I'm like, my wife, it's like, well, maybe this would be a good idea. I don't normally want anything, but I'm like, I actually need a new Elite 2 controller. And I either get the one I've got repaired or I, you know, it costs about the same. So yeah, it's not that much more for a Design Lab one, probably about an extra $20 without the extra bits. So
right.
Plus free engraving for Black Friday. So
yeah, I've been thinking about maybe getting another controller. We'll see. I don't necessarily need one, but it's my Design Lab one is already like, I fucked the bumper by playing too much Sekiro, where you just got to basically be mashing on that thing to be doing parries, and now it's like I can feel it doesn't click quite right, and I'm just like,
yeah,
I might just
retire.
Well,
that's the beauty of having the Elite 2, because you don't have to use the LB or the RB at all if you can allocate them to the back. So I normally with the Elite 2s have like the up and down shift, like one on the left, one on the right for the racing games. But they basically works out the same for like jumping and crouching in like Call of Duty and stuff like that as well. So it's the same. I can keep the one setup even though there's three different setups on it. So yeah.
Maybe I'll consider that then.
Pretty good. You could just get a core, yeah.
Yeah, the core. Yeah, I did see the cores actually look quite good. As always, we do the show live on Twitch. Xbox Hall of Gamers is the place to find us. We've got our audience here tonight. So we've got McNulty joining us, Firehawk, X, oh my God, Chris, and Zach's in the chat. Hi, guys. Thank you for joining us. But yeah, like we said, we do the show live every week or so. So come hang out with us. We post about it on our Discord. Discord is the best place to keep up with everything we've got going on, be it podcasts, live streams, competitions, shit posting. It's where it all happens.
Plus for calendars.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's get into our questions because we've got a couple of them this week. Cameron, I want to, yeah, this was an interest, this sparked a bit of an interesting discussion. Do you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, okay. So my question for the week was, do you believe YouTubers content creators should be compensated for covering games? They give a bit of context for this. Spirit Tea launched and Micro has put out a tweet thread just essentially saying, like, the game's I think either hit 1 million generated revenue already or 1 million copies sold.
They said
I
they
imagine.
basically they made like three times the development cost for it already,
Yeah.
which is great.
Which
Great
I
news.
yeah, great news for the developer, but I guess the context of the tweet was he essentially said that he felt icky paying for paid like all the bigger content creators were asking for money. And he was feeling icky about supporting that and put out a comment saying that it's a shame that nobody, I'm like, he essentially said, like, okay, nobody's really covered the game.
He's basically saying that, yeah, like he because he didn't, they didn't pay YouTubers to, and he's mostly talking about large content creators here. He's talking about, yeah, to basically cover his game, that it didn't get any coverage. The words he used were any coverage on YouTube, which is patently false and kind of.
And just to add more context, so he's a publisher. This is No More Robots. They have put out games such as there was Fashion Police Squad. What are the other ones that hit Game Pass? There was Soccer Story, Yes, Your Grace.
Yes, Your Grace is the one I always remember, yeah.
There's quite a few. But essentially, yeah, from this comment, there was about like it essentially went viral. There's a bit of backlash because it's kind of like it was very demeaning to the content creators that like there was one that for particular had put out 30 hours of content already, and just because they weren't a bigger content creator, it's just like cool. So you're not recognizing their efforts there. But I guess I got really interested because I've worked with a little bit of influencer marketing before, and it's not uncommon to see a content creator or YouTuber with 1, 2, 3 million subscribers asking for like $5,000 to $10,000 for a video. And I guess the question for the community is like, do you like where's the understanding with that? Do you think these creators are being paid for their time? Or do you see these creators as like they should just be getting their ad revenue off YouTube itself? So I'll pass the question on to you, Matt.
I've got thoughts, but I don't know. Keo, do you want to go first or?
Well, I mean, if you're I guess a developer and you're reaching out to the YouTube community to cover the game, I mean, the YouTubers are out there and some of these guys, it's their business, right? Their actual business and their entertainers and their personality is their persona is their business. So if it doesn't fit within their realm, just because it's like covering every game, it's like, yeah, it has to suit your style, right? You can't stream everything to get the hit. And if you do content that's outside of what you normally do, just because you're being paid to cover it, you run the risk of losing viewers because it's content that they're not there for, all that kind of stuff. And if you go in kind of, with a specific opinion, it might not be the opinion that some, if you're not into that kind of game, it might be the opinion that you won't that want that they won't want you to portray, basically. So it's like, do you cover it and have them do you cover it the way they want you to cover it because you've been paid or not? So I think if you're gonna have if you're gonna be reaching out to creators, then it's got to be creators that are in line with your content. And if the smaller creators are the ones that, they kind of shafted, he didn't really talk about their
Recognize them,
coverage,
yeah.
then like that's most likely going to be the audience over the big ones, which are, really looking for the big fish in terms of games coverage. So, yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that it's a bit of a complex issue because there's a lot of like it depends on like size of the developer. Is it a developer? Is it a publisher? Is it a marketing company? Is it like
Well,
and is a content creator? Is it a brand? Like if it's a brand, like okay, if Microsoft goes to let's say like PewDiePie or something again, like anyone, right? A large YouTube creator, like I mentioned in my answer to this, like Jesse Cox, for example, big content creator, has been doing this stuff for a long time. He literally has a playlist or ch a show that he does called Jesse Sells Out, where he literally says, "Hey, I will play your game if you pay me money. Like I will take a sponsorship, a brand deal for this, but you will be on a show called Jesse Sells Out. It'll be very clear that there's no." Which is like the like clarity is the key thing there, where it's like if you are doing a deal where it's like, hey, you're gonna play this game, give us exposure for this game and eyes on it and your opinion while you're playing it, but also not a review, because that's a little gets a little bit different. Like play through this game, give your impressions while you're playing it and be entertaining. And we will give you a certain amount of money. Like that's one thing, right? And there are some publishers who can afford to do that, and there are some that aren't. And I think that like Normal Robots are probably in that camp of saying, yeah, 5 to 10K for a single video from one person. It's like, yeah, it could be big, but like
It might not be worth it.
it's a lot, right? And I totally get that. And I think that YouTubers and content creators should definitely know their worth. And I think that like saying that they should never accept a brand deal, they should never be doing, they should never be paid for any of this stuff, and they should do it for the love of the community or whatever the fuck. I mean, like people gotta eat, like at the end of the
Yeah,
day.
and who's exposing who? So are you lifting the developer up, or is the game itself lifting up the creators?
And exactly, like that's kind of what I was saying, where it's like what kind of publisher are we talking about? What kind of channel are we talking about? How do those match? Where's the kind of difference in kind of the, is it a tit for tat? Is it like, hey, a smaller one basically wanting to kind of get out there a bit more? And kind of develop a relationship with this publisher or whatever, like there's kind of those things that go on. There years and years and years ago, there was a similar discussion that happened around when, video games journalism was more of a thing, when YouTube, when the kind of the video, like the video reviewers and kind of the influencer stuff was only just sort of starting. This was even before live streaming. There was a sort of a debate around like, well, people are getting like, should people be going to preview events? Because it's like, it's, or going to review events where it's like, hey, yeah, we won't send you the game, but we'll fly you out. We'll put you up in a nice hotel and we'll put you in like a, we'll feed you the whole way. And we'll basically, and I think for like one of the Call of Duties, they took them on like a helicopter trip or some shit. And then they're like, and then they just review the game. And you're like, okay, come on, guys. Like, yeah, like that was like the golden age of that shit. And there was a lot of people who were like, yeah, that's like kind of not really appropriate. It's like if you're calling yourself a journalist and kind of you're doing like proper reviews, you should try to be as impartial as possible
I
to
mean,
everything around the
it
game.
still happens now though. Like, I think I was watching SkillUp talk about, what was it? SkillUp's editor talking about being flown to Ubisoft to check out the Avatar.
And to be fair, like that's kind of, it used to be a lot more wild. Now it is more just like we fly you out so you can play the game because we don't re really trust you with dev kits, which is fair enough.
Ubisoft were doing like an online event for a lot of creators where you had to basically connect to their servers and you could play the game from your home.
Yeah, right. And
So, as
I
well.
think that's kind of being more of a thing. But then it kind of became that like games journalists were suddenly weren't getting early access to stuff, but streamers and like influencers and YouTube personalities were. And the kind of thing was, it was like, yeah, they were getting paid for it, but they weren't disclosing it. Because they were like, well, there isn't, they didn't have that journalistic integrity stuff that they needed to worry about. Because it's like, oh, well, I'm not a reviewer, I'm an entertainer. And so it doesn't really matter if I get paid to do this or not. And then I think the FCC disagreed. And it kind of turned into an interesting thing. I think that in this case, if a content creator comes up to you and says, hey, I'd love to, I was like, I'm really interested in your game, but also pay me $5,000. That's kind of skeevy. But if you're going to YouTubers and saying, hey, I mean, look, if you send your code out to like 100 different, content creators, and you go, hey, if you got a chance, here's a game, here's a bit about it, feel free to play. I mean, I think what was it? Sea Dog VA. I think recently he did like a thing where he's like, hey, I'm gonna do a stream. I'm just gonna play like 20 minutes of like all the fucking codes I've been sent of just shit.
So when I was working for TIC, we sent him like one of our art guys sent him like four or five codes. And like there was two that he just absolutely roasted. But then the other two, he was like, yeah, no, like these are actually pretty solid games. I would actually play these. But like that's like your organic outreach. So if you're sending a code, I think if you're the publisher or the developer and you're sending a code and you don't have an expectation, like it's like, hey, if you have time and you could cover that, that's great. But if they're a paid influencer, usually you'll send them over like a, I'm trying to think of what the term of it is now. Like just, a set of guidelines, like these are the communications we want you to get
Your
across.
talking
We,
points, yeah.
yeah, this is a call to action. This is like unique selling points of the game. What's going to differentiate it?
That
And like the
that's just
stream is going to
marketing.
know, the stream is going to know their community at the most. I honestly do believe that they should be paid because for one, they're the entertainers who's grown the channel, grown their community to that size. They've obviously done it for, big channels, they've done it for years. They are very aware of what their community likes and what their community doesn't like. Wonderbot, who has five, I think it's like 470,000 subscribers, he actually quote retweeted like a creator's perspective to Mike's tweet, which I just want to read for a moment and get your thoughts after. From the creator's perspective, there are way too many games. I actively try to cover most of the better new releases, and despite releasing 124 videos in the past 2 months, my backlog from that time still has 40 games that I haven't managed to get to, including Spirit Tea. Now, obviously, I'm probably an oddity. Many creators are. We all have our niches, but the rules are almost always, almost always the same. We prioritize coverage for games that best fit our channels because this is our job and we have to keep it growing and growing because it's capitalism. And since this year has been the best worst for gaming, creators can be extra selective about what they cover, especially in the life sim genre. This fall, we've had Paleo Pines, Coral Island, At Times Sandrock, Moonstone Island, Ikene Island, Cat Tales, plus others. During a game drought, usually spring and early summer, or in a year with less games, new releases can get prioritized easily. But right now in this year, many games go into the pile and might stay there for months, years, or forever, depending on a creator's priorities. When a developer offers the keys to streamer, what they're also offering is the intrinsic exposure that comes with the game as payment for the creator's labor and reach. Years ago, that was fine, but the exposure offered nowadays isn't worth nearly as much, which is where sponsorships come in. First, they guarantee that a game gets put on the top of the pile because now the creator has a contract to prioritize the game. Second, it makes up for a difference in exposure value between an offered game and a creator's usual fare. And then he goes into a lot of details, breaking down different games and just showing his stats for each of his, best and worst performing videos for like contracts and that to really go into detail. But like I 100% agree with like, or Wonderbot's probably like one of the better indie creators that's just like really honest and like he's very transparent to developers of this is what I want in a press kit. This is like I don't as a content creator, I don't want to be fluffing around like send me a code and I'll cover it if I think my community is going to gel with it.
And I think that's perfectly reasonable, right? Because I think what this boils down to is if you're handing money over to someone to play your game over the other stuff that they would have played organically, that's marketing. That's
Yeah, it's
a
marketing. That
that's
is,
sponsorship. You're literally paying for marketing. It's no different than getting, Tiger Woods to talk about fucking golf club or fucking Gillette razors. Like,
To me, the weird thing is though, like having like people like Mike, where they view these content creators as an icky thing, but then they're like, it's still doing press outreach and that kind of like PR agencies, and there's no difference in my eyes. It's just another level of marketing.
yeah, I think that part of it is age in terms of like how long those institutions have been around, right? And control. Like the thing is that there is there I, and understandably there is still some hesitancy about about using influencers for anything, really. I mean, they definitely provide some value, but I mean, this is the classic thing. The marketing 101, right? Is that about half the money that you spend on marketing is wasted. The tricky bit is trying to figure out which half it was, and that's kind of
Yeah. Well,
right.
I mean,
I want to interject 2 seconds.
go.
He made that comment, and the first thing that popped into my eyes, popped into my head, sorry, was Britney Spears, Pepsi campaign, and drinking a Coke bottle.
Yeah, right.
The first thing that jumped into my head.
I'm
Anyway,
pretty
sorry, Tia,
sure
go on.
if he threw a bunch of codes and stuff at influencers, he probably could have gotten a whole bunch of grabs. Influencers and content creators are kind of separating themselves a little
A
bit,
little bit, yeah.
I still think
So.
it's still like organic marketing though. Like it's still
Yeah, I mean, look, like
pretty
that's
expensive.
yeah. If you're sending codes out, it's like, hey, you might like this. I know your channel. Like, check us out if you got time. Would be great. Would appreciate it. It's like your audience will probably like it, and you'll make ad revenue, and I will get exposure for my game. That's the agreement there,
Win-win.
right? But it's like, hey, if you want your thing to get to the top of the pile and get priority, then you got to pay for that, and then obviously you need to disclose that it's been paid for. And anyone who sees a paid sponsorship should take that with a massive grain of salt, because that changes relationships and changes people's perspectives, even if they say they don't. I mean, that's just the way things are. But like, I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with doing that. I know that some people are like, well, it's like, what am I actually getting for that? And it's like, well, that's up to you. Like you, like I, you know, I, we, it's like, oh, I could have spent that money on, display ads or pay-per-click or Facebook ads or LinkedIn ads or whatever. And it's like, yeah, sure. And like, you probably maybe get a slightly better measurement on what the effectiveness of those are. But you know, when it comes to video games, like we're not talking about like toilet paper or crackers or, like we're talking about like experiences. So like, and ex we're talking about expensive experiences that really benefit from people who have experience with those games having opinions on them and being able to expose those to an audience.
I was gonna say, like, the best content creator, like I've got one example that doesn't do paid, like he doesn't do paid contracts on that, and that's Splattercat. Like he still work with PR outreach, just to, get a feel of what the game's coming out and that kind of stuff, and like have that level of communication. But he doesn't take payment for them, or at least he doesn't when, like, at the moment that I've seen.
Interesting. Does he still do like other campaigns as well? Because I mean, you got to supplement your income somehow, right?
I'm guessing it. There must be something else, but
Because it's like, I
from what
mean,
I've
like the other example would, like, I'm thinking of like SkillUp, for example, right? Is that he doesn't usually do video game.
there's sponsorships, that kind of stuff.
He does other sponsorships, right? You get your like your NordVPNs and that kind of stuff, which is like, I think is less of a problem because you're talking about a brand as opposed to the thing you're actually reviewing or talking about.
Which I think, like, channels like Splattercat and SkillUp and all that are, like, good because they give you a very, I would say, like, removed, like, opinion. Like, sure, there's always going to be, like, some level of, like, emotional attachment to,
You're talking about bias. Yeah, like I
yeah,
think
like,
that
there's going to be something biased for, like, an experience.
sure. But the thing
Well,
is like
it's,
I, yeah.
like the helicopter thing, with Call of Duty, we were talking, I think, before the show.
Yeah, or we yeah,
There's,
we
like, a whole,
yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned it on the show or if it
Yeah, we
was in
did,
the
yeah.
pre-roll. So it's just like any kind of influence, you're basically reviewing an experience. You're not reviewing the game. If you're getting endorsements that are, like, largely outside of what you normally get, then you run into the territory of, you're gonna have a huge bias there if you're, getting more cash than you think you should be for
Yeah.
something, or.
And I think that you should try and remove some biases from like some things that from influencing your opinion. It's like, it's the classic thing of like, do I review a game from someone who I know or is a friend of mine or I have a personal relationship with? It's like
Exactly.
maybe,
You don't
but
want to
like
disappoint them, or.
yeah, exactly. Like it gets murky, right? It's like, well, then when money gets involved, it gets murky. And then it's like, yeah, when you have like other perks and stuff, it gets weird. I think that, like I like SkillUp's channel and reviews because of like I'm there for their opinion as opposed to like, and so like the thing about reviews, and we're kind of the topic, we're a little off topic, but the thing about reviews is that you shouldn't need to find a review that completely agrees with your opinion. You basically use reviews to understand someone's opinion, and then once you understand, if you understand that person and their personality, then you kind of be like, okay, well, they're like, you know, like, it, you know, if you hear Ralph talking about like Destiny, I'm like, okay, cool, good to know about Destiny. Like, but I also like, I'm,
Complete bias.
yeah, 100%. Like, he, which is totally fine. Like, it's kind of like, I know that if I'm interested in Destiny stuff, I'll listen to what he has to say, but I'll also be like, yeah, but he also loves Destiny, which is totally fine. And it's like, you know, he had his thing about Final Fantasy, and I have my thing about games. And when we do like reviews, or when we talk about games, right? Like, I think that people don't have to agree with the personality talking about the games. It's more to give you an understanding of like where, what you'll probably think about a game, knowing the person who's talking about it.
It's sharing the information, it's sharing the details of the game, the unique selling points to it, the differences from, like, for I think, like, that's probably one of the best qualities of our podcast. We play so many different games that it really gives us a good comparison to,
Yeah,
like,
well,
we're
achievement
not,
hunters in general, like, have such a breadth of knowledge of different experiences.
it's
So.
one of the best qualities about our community is we can actually go in there, have a conversation based on like 5 to 10 different other games that we've played before. And I know like a lot of conversations, like in media, comes down to like, oh, it's a Souls-like or it's a Zelda-like or
It's
like,
this meets this.
but like it still is a, like, it's still a good conversation, still a good form of communication to like really get your point across into what a particular game is about. And I think achievement hunters are very lucky to be able to pull from, like, especially Game Pass. It's very easy to pull from Game Pass games from the past now and just be like, oh yeah, it's like this, and people just immediately click onto what you understand.
I have a one of those games I've been playing this week, and actually, we've been at this for a while. Do you guys want to move on to the next question? Because I think that might transition us nicely into our question from Isaac this week.
This week?
Or last week technically, yes.
Play
He says, "Hey guys,
catch up.
I've been playing a lot of Island Saver lately. It's a pretty quick completion, 10 hours, and it's been on my backlog, so I started it up. I'm actually really enjoying it. It's very simple and childish, but it ticks a box for me in the do thing, get reward. Are there any games that ended up being very different from what you expected? Thanks for the show." And I think this kind of ties in nicely, right? Where we're talking about like, yeah, like how do you describe games? Being well-rounded is helpful when it's like you've got a lot of points of reference. When you see a game, you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of like this, kind of like this, kind of like this. And it can be a little bit reductive, but at the end of the day, you know, there are so many games out there that most people are like, I don't even know if I have time to start this, let alone like put like 20 hours into it. Give me something to at least grab onto. Is anything sort of spring to mind?
I would I'm trying to think of the best way to like answer this, because there's like, I'll use something that I've been playing like last weekend, Like a Dragon, Gaiden, the man who erased his name. It is a Yakuza game, but like, okay, I'm talking entirely from the achievement hunter sense of typically these games run from 100 to 200 hours, and this was a 20 hour bite-sized really good Yakuza game for me. That really tied like 3 to 4 other Yakuza games together, or will essentially. There's some that are in the past that are going to connect to stuff like Infinite Wealth coming out. But I went in that just, you know, kind of expecting like, all right, this is still going to be the long kind of game, but there's a lot of the fluff cut out of it. And I'll go more into it like a little bit later on, but like a really enjoyable experience. Other than that, the only other stuff is, I guess, the indie stuff that's like not really communicated well, like Omen Sight kind of like pops into mind of like, you know, you got that short descriptor of like one, two, like it's a time travel hack and slash. And it's like, what does,
What does that mean?
like essentially, like, what does that mean in your play? And I'm like, this is amazing. I wish I had jumped on this sooner.
Agreed.
There's like two that pop into my head.
Yeah, the only one I can think that I've probably played recently is, I went into Immortality only really just expecting like pretty straightforward go from A to B kind of like, you know, FMV video kind of stuff. But the twists that you, with that game, where you have to kind of rewind and slowly and fast and find little hidden objects and clicking on things, and like, it's just like a neat little experience where you just don't really expect to do as much work as you think you need to, you know, in the end to actually pull it off. So yeah,
I
that
want to
was the
pigeon.
interesting answer.
I want to pigeonhole a quick fact that I learned this week. I was watching one of the BAFTA Awards videos where they did an interview with
Sam Barlow.
Huh? No,
Who's
no,
that?
not Sam. Sam Blake. The,
Oh,
talking
Sam.
about Alan. Yeah, talking about
Talking
Alan Wake 2,
about.
and talking about like all the inspiration for the video stuff in Alan Wake 2 comes from telling lies and
Yeah,
like
right.
immortality.
All Sam Barlow stuff.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And it was
Makes
just, it was like
logical
one of
sense.
those gush moments that is just like, cool, a great game shouting out another game. But yeah, like 100% agree with like even just going past the immortality, like telling like all the stuff that built up to immortality.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what
Have
else.
you got one? I have maybe I'm just kind of thinking about it because it also relates back to all the games we play. It's kind of hard to be surprised. You know, there's the Joseph Campbell thing, like Hero's Journey. Like there's only like 10 stories to be told. And so it's like finding a truly unique and interesting game is very, very rare. I
I think
will.
the ones I stick with the longest are probably the ones that really surprise me.
Actually, I've got one, and it's like for a complete like this isn't story based or anything. This is like completely, this is brand recognition. The Monopoly Madness that came out,
Oh yeah, right.
because you like off the cover, we've known Monopoly for years upon years. There's such a clear expectation in our heads, and being able to take that familiar IP and then just like spin it into a live action game was like complete, like just something very interesting. Probably not what Isaac is asking here, but it's just one of those things that you expect one thing and you don't like, you get something else. And it's still good. I don't want to discredit it, but it's different to what you were expecting to get in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, like from that angle, there's quite a few. I remember one that just kind of popped into my head when I first read this question. Do you guys remember that movie Turbo?
I've never seen it. Is that the snail
Is
one?
the
It's
snail, the fast
okay,
snail
yeah.
one. So that, you know, back in the 360 days, they released a bunch of these kinds of, you know, like movie licensed games. And I picked this one up and I was like, okay, this is probably gonna be like another like Meet the Robinsons like platformer or like puzzle game, whatever. It's Tony Hawk. The game is Tony Hawk. The game is literally going around in half pipes and doing like tricks and shit. And I'm like, what the fuck is this game? I was so confused. I was like, they actually like made a game. It wasn't just like a total weird platform. Like, that's the one that popped in my mind because I was like so surprised when I started the game up that it just was not at all what I expected.
Just trying to, I'm just looking through my list quickly to just see if there's any games that like jump out to me that I wasn't.
I think what you said about Game Pass was also a good shout because there's so much stuff that comes to Game Pass that like gets like either gets very little in the description or very little at least on True Team, it's like a lot of people like not playing a lot of stuff that comes into Game Pass early. So yeah, like Gungrave Gore, like I had no idea what to expect when I started the game up.
I've got a good one. I've got two really good ones. Little Miss Fortune,
Oh
like
yes.
just from the absolute top, you're just thinking like a very cute, like adventure, and it like in terms of walk sim, just a very powerful like 2 hours, especially with the ending. And then the other one I was going to say was Hitman Space Outlaw, another No More Rovers game. From surface level, you kind of just think it is a 90s web browser kind of game,
Which it
but
kind of
then
is.
which it is on a surface level, but like when you get into the narrative, like realizing the deeper levels of it.
I'm just kind of going through my recent list and like looking at like GameStop stuff that I picked up that I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna play this. It's leaving. I should probably jump on it. And so like I didn't know what to expect from like Ghost Runner. I didn't really know much about. I was kind of like I knew it was like it had like,
You know, it was a game that I bought you, and then you decided to put off for like 2 years.
So yeah, well I it's like I knew it was like a Mirror's Edge kind of like first person runner game, but I didn't quite realize like how it worked. I didn't realize how much I'd love it.
And
Leaving of
there's,
Town.
I was gonna say, there's games like North that I'm just like, I still don't understand to
Yeah,
this
right. Very,
day.
yeah, exactly. Doki Doki Literature Club, David points out, is a fantastic example. I mean, Unfortunately, I knew exactly what that was going into it because I just got quite spoiled.
Yeah, I
But
was thinking about playing that actually over the next couple of weeks.
really, it's definitely worth talking about. Yeah, that's yeah, a lot of it's unfortunately kind of got meme status. But like Legend of Tianding, which left Game Pass a few weeks ago, like that was like one where I was like, I don't know what kind of game this was. And then it turns out it's literally just Guacamelee. It's like side-scrolling Guacamelee, like has like an uppercut attack and all that kind of stuff. Trek to Yomi, Weird West, Moonscars, like a lot of the stuff where it's like indie games that I
I mean, there's
don't
a few
really.
of those though that you kind of like. I could judge on so like Weird West. I could kind of judge on surface level what it was going to be.
Yeah, like I was like, okay, it's got like
What do you
I
mean,
was twin stick
narrative?
shooter, right? But then it has
Okay.
like okay, it's but also kind of has like immersive sim elements and then five different characters. Whereas something like like Sea of Stars, I pretty much knew what I was getting to straight away. I was like, okay, cool, Chrono Trigger, meets Super Mario RPG, basically. Yeah, like Super Time Force is another great example of a game that was very fucking surprising when I played it because I was like, how the fuck does this work? I still haven't quite figured it out, but
And there's a few of these kind of things that we could like take in separate, like it could be narrative based, it could be gameplay.
yeah.
Like I usually think with the FMVs from like Whales Interactives, I don't really have any judgment going into them for the most part. Other than just like the premise of like it's essentially like the setup at the start of the movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly
That's
right. It's
just
like,
the
okay, who
narrative.
knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
McPixel 3 is another great example of just being like, they jumped on a Game Pass and I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm going to try it. And it was amazing. That like I love being surprised by stuff on Game Pass. Like I like when I did Jusant, like Jusant wasn't much of a surprise because I was like, okay, rock climbing. It was a rock climbing game. Like it was very much like, okay, yep, it is what it is. And I really, yeah, but I really enjoyed it. I'm just kind of, yeah, I'm like, yeah, Ni No Kuni 2 was kind of a surprise considering how the first one went. Yeah, there's just, I mean, yeah, it's hard to surprise with games these days, but I'm always delighted when it happens. And even the game I played this week, playing through Eastwood, I had no idea what to expect going into that. There wasn't really a lot, not a lot of people played it. It had like a 6.0 ratio. I was like, wow, is this game like insanely difficult or something? And no, it just turns out it's just like quite a bit involved to kind of get through it. But I'll talk a bit more about that. But I think Game Pass is a fantastic place for these surprises to come through because it gives developers a way to get games in front of people like me who want weird, interesting experiences for a couple of hours.
I'm just trying to think, I guess PAX and GCAP and that kind of stuff with the like the more experimental stuff like Dark Web Streamer.
Yeah, right.
Just like you have to stream to survive kind of thing. And just like what does that mean?
Yeah.
Because like the Australian game dev scene at the moment, I feel like there's a lot more like some of the indie projects are just taking like massive swings.
Which is great. Like, I think that's, yeah, I think that that's a, I think part of that is like getting games coming from new, interesting people who normally wouldn't have had the chance to make a game. And even if they did, to, not have it published or not have it seen. David
Any other
also points out
examples?
David also points out Vampire Survivors surprising everyone. That's a very good point, actually. Yeah, that game is very, that's, I'm surprised at why people enjoy that game. No, it's fine. It's fine.
Whoa.
It's just really fucking basic.
I just like seeing stuff like when Shane posts his little clips of him just sitting in one spot and it's just like
Yeah.
huge amounts of stuff going on. I'm like, how do you even get
Yeah.
to that point?
Yeah.
Eternal survival.
Yeah, Firehawk also, Shane also points out, asks, so like, is he the only one who tests out every Game Pass game? I mean, I play a lot of them when they're leaving, and I do try to play a few as they sort of join. And I play a lot of them, but definitely not all of them. I definitely like there's ones in there that I still have in my like play later list that I don't know if I'll ever get to, but
Yeah, I used to. But yeah, I'd like to do it a little bit more, but
I will say this, the other place we haven't really taken this question to, and just to quickly cap it off, is games that like we've played it like a side, like a PAX Souls or something for like 10, 15 minutes, got a demo, but then got our hands on the full experience. Like I'm thinking of stuff like Dredge this year, Space for the Underbow, where I've played the demos, I've really enjoyed them, but is like that, like it encapsulates the full game, but I just fall in love with it. You get what I mean? Like,
Yeah. I don't know if Dredge is the best example. I don't know. I like
I mean,
Dredge.
Dredge, you know where it's going. Space for the Unbound is just like, all right, cool. I by the end of a Space for the Unbound, I don't want to spoil things, but it's just
Sure.
completely different. Yeah.
Well, yeah, hopefully that answers your question, Isaac. We love surprises. We love talking about them. Hopefully we'll have more coming up in the next in the following year. Let's get into some news. I mean, I guess the biggest one is probably going to be Baldur's Gate 3, Alan Wake 2, Game of the Year. Like, I mean, the Game Awards have basically announced all their category stuff. We won't go through all of it because that's not what we're about. But I suppose we could talk about some of the categories.
Yeah, at least a little bit, I think.
Yeah. So Game of the Year. So Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
How are we
So it,
feeling about
I
these?
was so confident early in the year that Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom would take it,
Yeah.
and I honestly think Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost certain it's going to be that.
I feel like it is very much the conversation of like how Elden Ring changed the landscape last year for gaming. I think Baldur's Gate 3 has done it for
Yeah, I
the
think, yeah,
genre.
the kind of mass market appeal that that game has had. I mean,
Yeah, like going backwards, Resident Evil 4 doesn't stand a chance. I think like may like very, very unlikely, but I think Wonder has kind of reinvented Mario.
yeah, and people are really enjoying it, but I don't think it stands up to the other two.
I think it's like a 9 out of 10 experience, but it doesn't like it's
I
still
mean,
Mario at the end of the
these
day.
are all like 9 out of 10 games. They're all fucking fantastic, right?
Like like honestly, I think it would be Baldur's Gate 3. Personally, really wish it was Alan Wake 2.
I mean, personally, the ones I played two of them because Baldur's Gate 3, unfortunately, and that's probably going to be for our Game of the Year chat. Baldur's Gate 3 is not going to be out in time for us to really properly review it, probably, unfortunately. But that's their fault, not us. Yeah, but I would say, yeah, I would definitely pick Alan Wake 2 out of that list of the
Yeah,
ones I
I've
played.
not played any of those games like at all. So, yeah, so my game of the year list has to be more of a personal list. So,
But yeah, David points out that it's like, yeah, Resident Evil 4 is still one of my favorite games of the year, but isn't winning. Yeah, like I
It
really
won't
enjoyed
win
Resident
because
Evil
it's a
4.
remake.
Yeah,
Like
I
that.
also don't, yeah, I don't know if it deserves to win, to be fair, but I did really, really enjoy playing through it, for the most part. Game direction is basically that same list. Best narrative is, yeah, Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty DLC, which I'm like, yeah, I don't know if that really should be in there because I think it's a DLC, but whatever. Final Fantasy 16 and Marvel's Spider-Man 2. I think it's got to go to Alan Wake 2, right?
It's
Like
got to go
that.
down way. I think as much as I think Baldur's Gate 3 deserves Game of the Year, I think Alan Wake 2 deserves Best Narrative.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Yeah, art direction, best score music, audio design, best performance. It's an interesting one.
Let's go like our direction. Who do you like? We've got Alan Wake 2, Hi-Fi Rush, Lies of P, Super Mario Brothers Wonder, and Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom.
Hi-Fi Rush for sure.
Yeah.
If I was going to pick, that'd be Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah, I know like I think it's the only list that Lies of P is actually on, and I get kind of why it's there. Because it's changed, you know, it made what was good about Dark Souls games and stuff like that, like it made it put a twist on the story, basically, I guess you could say. And it's all kind of all encompassing into the whole into what that game is about the atmosphere of the game
Yeah, that's
behind
very
the
true.
story. So, but there won't be enough people anywhere near playing it, all of the story to kind of get what we kind of get out of it, like for us that have finished it. So, yeah.
No, it's a very, very good point. Yeah, best score of music, I don't know. I mean, that's I like best score music audio design, I'm always like, I don't know. That's always a bit of a
Yeah.
weird one.
I think the one that's kind of like I obviously haven't played everything here. I've only played Hi-Fi Rush and Alan Wake 2, but like out of those, Alan Wake 2, I was listening to those full songs after each chapter. I was very impressed, and I immediately added them to my Spotify.
I've heard that Alan Wake 2 should probably be like of all of those games. Now, I want to talk about Final Fantasy 16 on this list for a second. If you play Final Fantasy 16, you immediately get the feeling of Final Fantasy 14. So Masayoshi Soken basically composes a lot of stuff on 14, and everything is very, very similar. It's all of the same beats that you kind of get from the 14 music. To the point where you think it's basically remastered tracks of the 14 list. So like it makes you want to go back and play 14. So there's so much 14 in terms of like the background of playing 16 that makes you want to go back to 14. So it's the best piece of advertising that they could have marketing that they could have had for 14.
I mean, 14's doing well, so
So
doesn't, yeah.
it is.
Best performance would be an interesting one.
Okay, so Neil Newborn, who plays what's his name in Baldur's Gate?
I.
The main one that everybody first traps over.
Mysterion,
Asterion, yeah.
the vampire, yeah.
So he was actually gonna quit acting.
Wow.
And like this was like the one role that kind of just turned everything around for him. So I would be
Fuck, yeah, he's
very
probably gonna win, isn't
surprised.
he? Yeah.
I'm very surprised if he doesn't get it.
I think it's probably between him and Ben Starr. I think like the prevailing thing that's come out of Final Fantasy 16 from people who did enjoy and didn't enjoy it is that Ben Starr's performance is fantastic.
I don't know. People are talking about Yuri Lowenthal a lot.
True.
So, yeah.
That's true.
But I guess his performance is worlds better than some of the others in that game. So, yeah.
Back press. Innovation accessibility.
I think Forza is probably going to win that one.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much competition anywhere else there, really.
Games for Impact. We have Space of the Unbound, Chance of Sanaa, Goodbye Volcano High, Toshiya, Terranil, and Vemba. Quick note, Togate bought Mojang this week.
Oh.
They acquired Mojang yesterday. And
Okay.
I am so goddamn happy because just all our listeners, Mojang put out When the Past Was Around as well as Space of the Unbound. And I would say Space of the Unbound is like one of the most impactful games I like it has such a strong narrative. And I'm so glad that they're getting recognized for it. So that's my vote.
Yeah, fair.
I don't know how many people know Goodbye Volcano High very much. But there's some really interesting
It's
contact in that. So
not in our community. It's only a PlayStation
exactly.
PC title, right?
Yeah, because I thought they showed it off at an Xbox thing at some point ages ago or
And I
something.
think got exclusivity
Yeah,
after.
which is a shame. I
But it's
enjoyed,
got some really interesting good premises. Like it's like the world's ending, I believe, and you kind of like there's a lot of stuff to do with the drama of the students realizing that their world is going to end. So it's got a
They're
lot
also
of
all dinosaurs,
heavy,
yeah.
heavy background stuff. So
I like Vemba, but I don't think Vemba's got
No,
the
I don't
it's
think so
not long
either.
enough.
It's fine. Vemba's okay, but like Vemba's a nice game, but
I got apt I will say though, in all the games that came out this year, I got pissed off once when I saw the guy when the guy got beaten up, the dad.
yeah.
And then Nikita played it not too long ago. I finished the podcast, walked in there, and I saw it again. I was immediately pissed off.
Yeah.
So I did get the right information. Best ongoing.
It's gonna be
Apex.
Final Fantasy 14. I don't care about
Easy.
any of these other games. It's Final Fantasy 14 is the correct answer.
Yep. Yeah.
Fortnite are so creatively bankrupt that they had to bring back the original island. Genshin Impact is for people who like kids. Cyberpunk.
But the meme.
So yeah,
The
sure.
meme
There,
is
the
great.
meme is strong. There is strong meme potential there, but yeah, and I like and also Cyberpunk 2077 is not an ongoing game. That should not be in that category.
Yeah, not
They
really.
released one DLC pack, and they did some patches, sure, but that's not an ongoing game.
Yeah,
That's not
it's
how that
not
works.
the actual meaning.
They
Yeah.
should not be pat on the back for having a bad launch.
No, fuck that. No, absolutely not.
As rough it is to say. Best community support: Baldur's Gate 3, Cyberpunk 2077, Destiny 2, Final Fantasy 14, and No Man's Sky. Destiny 2 does not belong on this
No,
list.
it does not.
Does not.
And
No.
Final Fantasy 14 should just win.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I always
Yeah.
tend to
It
agree with Final
won both
Fantasy.
last time, didn't it? Ongoing and community support, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. All
Mm.
right, and we'll just do these last two. Best independent game and best
Yep.
debut
I
indie
forgot that.
game.
You don't want to talk about best mobile game?
No,
I
I
want
do not want to talk about any.
to
I don't want to talk about
talk
anything below that list. I just do not care.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I go independent, go debut indie. So
Yeah.
independent, Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars, and Viewfinder.
Some fantastic games on that list. I feel like Dave the Diver is probably going to win.
Yeah, shouldn't.
Yeah,
Shouldn't.
I think Cocoon. I mean, Cocoon is probably going to end up on my Game of the Year list.
I'm so torn between Cocoon and Dredge because
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cocoon I will recognize for the wonder, like I'm not that into puzzle games, but I recognize it for the amazing level of game, like
It was,
interactivity of the
yeah,
gameplay.
so smart. Like,
So
just,
clever.
yeah.
Dredge though, Dredge is 100% what I'm looking like. I don't typically have that game. Like, you know, I'll pick up Forza and I'll play it for hours on end. I'll wake up at 3 o'clock and I'll play Forza. Dredge to me had that feeling, and I never felt it in an indie game before.
I like Dredge, but unfortunately, there's not a lot there. It doesn't really have any puzzles. Its narrative is very thin. I mean, I like the world. The world is amazing, and I somewhat enjoy the fishing. But I don't know.
But then to me, that's like, tell me what Cocoon's narrative is.
I mean, yeah,
That
that's
that's
in the
it's the
same
same argument.
you can't talk about Cocoon's narrative without massively spoiling the end of the game. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's a fair point.
So
But yeah, I mean, like Cocoon comes from a lineage of those kinds of games, right? Of like Limbo, and what was it, Summer, what was it called?
Somerville.
Somerville,
Limbo
and
inside
Inside,
Somerville.
yeah, those kinds of games, basically, right? Where it's like narrative light, very
Yeah.
up for interpretation. The gameplay is the story. The gameplay is the selling feature. Whereas, like, I feel like Dredge's gameplay is there. It feels like it's there by necessity, and everything else is kind of the interesting part. Because the fishing is actually not that.
Yeah.
It's fine. You know,
I know, like personally, to me, out of the list, I think Dredge deserves to, as much as I like Cocoon.
Well, that's
Like
understandable.
I'm very torn in the moment about including Cocoon. Like it's so clever, but it's not something that typically gels with me.
Sure.
Right. Okay.
I'm also like, man, Sea of Stars, this would probably be a good spot for that too, unfortunately, because it is such a good fucking game.
I think Viewfinder as well, if we'd played it. It's just the fact
Yeah,
that it's not on the platform.
not a
Like
platform, yeah.
view, I think Viewfinder is kind of like in that same field as Cocoon, where Cocoon has a really clever gameplay mechanic and just does it really well. Whereas in like Dave the Diver, and Dave the Diver is just a big budget game to
Yes.
me that does a whole bunch of
Yeah, it's
different
not an
stuff.
indie game, really.
Yeah.
It just looks indie. That's a yeah. I mean, like we talked about how it was great. It's been a great year for AAA games. It's also been an amazing year for indie games too. Like,
We've been spoiled.
fuck
Like
me, it's been
it's
good years. It's one of the best years for gaming I've ever seen. And then best debut indie game is basically the same list. So Cocoon, Dredge, we've got Pizza Tower in there, Vember, and Viewfinder. I don't think Vember really should be on that list. I mean, like, I
I
understand.
think Vember's a good game, but I think it's way too short. If it was like more of a 3 to 4 hour experience, I'd be a lot more
Maybe.
forgiving.
Yeah, I don't know. Pizza Tower, I've heard a lot of hype for, but
I only heard about it like last week or something.
it got memed a lot.
I missed all of that.
I can only think of pizza, possum pizza.
Yeah.
Oh, I okay. I immediately know what this.
Yeah, Pizza
Yeah,
Tower.
this
Yeah,
is a meme game.
it is. It's 100% a meme game, but people really got into it.
That bloody meme, like with the screaming.
Yeah, yeah,
Oh, that.
yeah. There's, yeah, that's
That does
exactly
not
what.
deserve to win.
No, probably not. But to be fair, as a debut indie game, it's pretty impressive. But yeah, I think if I was gonna go across this list, I would say independent game can go to Dredge, and debut indie game can go to Cocoon, and everyone can be happy.
Yeah. And Games for Impact should go for Space of the Unbound.
Yeah, let's go for that. But yeah, there's a heap more categories, but we shall see in 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks. I think it's on the 7th, I think it was, or 8th, 8th maybe, somewhere around there. They're doing the Game Awards. So a couple weeks from now, we'll obviously have a show the night before. So that should be very interesting. And then we'll report on who won and then argue about it. Just like, we'll argue about it, and then the internet will argue about it, and then then we'll come up with our games of the year, I suppose, by that stage. Kind of related to that, apparently Baldur's Gate 3, they're going to be announcing the release date for it on Xbox at the Game Awards. So
Of course.
best be tuning in.
What do you reckon? Shadow drop there and
It's
then?
it has to be a shadow drop.
Damn,
Are you
I was looking so forward to getting a Hellblade 2 announcement for a release date because you knew it was going to come. And I'm immediately just like, yep, they've thrown it to the wayside for Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah, like Baldur's Gate, like it's yeah, like to Kier's point, I think it has to be a shadow drop at this point, because it's either it's dropping now or it's dropping like the week after, and even then, like December 7th is really late in the year.
What if they dropped it and it was a game part? Like
Oh fuck me, if they dropped it on Game Pass, that would be insane. I don't think so. I don't think that. Well,
nah,
I don't.
not after the conversation. They said they would only spend 5 mil on it.
Yeah, it's probably closer to
There's gonna
50.
be a lot more.
Gonna say closer to 50 mil now, probably. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I think Game Pass would be an amazing fit for them. It would be a massive coup for Xbox. And to be fair, they have said they're not. I don't know. I don't think so though. I feel like they're gonna want to make their money.
Yeah, I think like they know how well this can go. They've essentially done like a, I don't want to say exclusivity agreement, but they've done like a really well-designed staggered release and absolutely milked the fuck out of it.
Good for them. I'm glad. I love Larry, and I've played so many of the games.
Be very interested to see like what they do like now. They cleaned up at what was the showcase that wasn't too long ago?
Golden Joysticks. Yeah, they got like seven awards or something, which is huge. And well, very well deserved. Want to put this one about Warner Brothers. Is that you, Cameron?
Yeah, this was the last week's news stories. Essentially, they just to keep it really short, they've said that they're going to turn all their major franchises into always on with live services, our favorite stuff as gamers. So this article came out last week, when we were going to have a show, but then I was the only one here. Sorry.
Wow, okay.
Well, we can talk about that on the show if you like.
Yeah, I
It's fine.
mean,
It's a
just call yourself out.
whole fucking fleet of buses. I'm just getting thrown under here.
Anyway, so during like in the last week, there's been gameplay footage shown off for the Suicide Squad stuff.
Which actually looks better,
It looks
but
better, but it looks
still looks like
very.
shit.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna be picking it up. At least not at first. Just like with the prior games they've done, like it's just like why would you go in this direction? Why would you go live service?
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
There was also rumors that apparently, like, there were rumors going around that the new Wonder Woman game was apparently going to have live service stuff in it, or be an
Yeah, I
always
wouldn't be
online game,
surprised.
which they
Yeah,
said,
they shut that down already, though.
yeah, they shut it down, but
But
yeah, they shut it down in a very corporate way that kind of left the door somewhat open, but not like, yeah, but yeah, they did kind of quash those rumors. So I am interested to see what happens, because
essentially, the statement at the moment is like ultimately, when we want to drive engagement and monetization of longer cycles and at higher levels.
Yeah,
They
which,
have put, yeah, they've advertised the jobs for it and. I know it's just disappointing to see. It's like Firework says, not what you want from Rocksteady.
exactly right, and it's not from what you want from a lot of these franchises.
But yeah, there's not really much else to say on that. Yeah, I didn't like the Suicide Squad footage.
Yeah, I thought it looked better than the last one they showed, but it does still doesn't look compelling enough to pick up.
Yeah, I largely
The dislike
ignored it.
ratio on that
So,
video was really bad.
yeah, not surprising.
Probably like Call of Duty, not Advanced. What was it? Infinite Warfare. Bad.
Oh, that's a rough one. I will say one interesting thing. So, like, you know, we've been talking a lot about over the year, we've been talking a lot about things we've been playing, Game of the Year, that kind of stuff. One of the interesting things that hasn't come up in any Game of the Year discussion, Mortal Kombat 1.
So if look, I'll go and get my girlfriend and we can have
Sure.
that discussion now,
Sure,
and
but
she will tell you.
like the here's the thing, right? Is that like I have not heard a single outlet, I haven't heard a single person even mention it in the same breath as Game of the Year, or even close to it as a discussion point. It really feels like that game did not do well, and I think a lot of that is, and a lot of people were pointing to like the microtransactions being egregious. I mean, look, they were bad in 11. Like, you know, paying, there's the whole paying for easy fatality stuff and all that kind of stuff, but like it's gotten to a whole nother level.
I'm just trying to see if they put out any statement of like copies sold or All right, so this is just this is what I've pulled up from Steam. No cross-play, PC can only play a PC, and the community is much smaller than a console. Bugged online matches, 8 paid DLCs released day one, invasion mode boring and outdated, limited character roster kept to a minimum. All you can do is buy and unlock cosmetics, internet connection needed to access progress, bugs, desynchronizations, disconnections, intolerable 30 FPS lock, worthy. Unworthy of a 2023 game sold for $70 to $100. Lazy work in general. Try Kenshi's first fatality on a long-haired person to see. Local two-player can't use customization options. Buying a second game is needed for
Yeah.
that.
All right. There is one thing that you haven't mentioned there, and that's the Switch port.
Also,
Oh,
yes. Fuck me.
So you calling that game of the year quality across the board?
Yeah,
Okay.
exactly right. And I think that speaks to, I mean, look, like Mortal Kombat is usually not the kind of game that's going to win a Game of the Year award, right? I mean, it might win something, might win by category somewhere or get nominated for a category here or there. But
I'm pretty sure it did get nominated for like best fighting game.
sure, yeah, because you know, I mean, yeah, but in a year where Street Fighter VI came out, good fucking luck, holy shit.
True.
I just, yeah, it does. Like, I really enjoyed 10, and I enjoyed 11 quite a bit as well. And I have not even thought about play. Like, this is the first time I thought about, you know, I've been going through my list of like, hey, make sure I play all this before the end of the year so we have stuff to talk about. And like, I completely forgot about Mortal Kombat 1. I just did not.
It's installed in the lounge room and I haven't touched it. Like I've just let Nikita play. I the only thing that like one excites me with is the fact that you can play Zombie Man
Homelander, yeah.
and Homelander. But Anthony Starr came out and said that he wasn't the voice of Homelander
Yeah,
in the game.
that's a shame.
But then Zombie Man's voice, what's his name?
J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons, that's it. I always immediately go to the Spider-Man name.
J. Joe Jimenez, yeah.
I'm just like, that's not it. But like, just like the DLC roster is exciting.
Yeah.
And like people like that love fighting games like Nikita just will talk like endlessly about it. But yeah, I don't think the content
Like,
is
yeah,
up there.
I guess for me, it's like Mortal Kombat is one of those fighting games that sort of transcends people who play fighting games a lot of the time. It's like, 'cause like, I mean, you know, like my history with fighting games is that I'm fucking shit at them and I hate them, but I still finished 10 and 11. But yeah, it just kind of popped up because I saw it like as, because obviously Warner Brothers own that property as well, and trying to milk every dollar out of it, which is probably why we're having this discussion now, is because they probably made a good chunk of change on
It
it.
kind of makes you wonder, like, okay, so if they hadn't bought Bethesda back a few years ago, what would have been the outcome of buying the Warner Brothers IPs?
Probably not great, actually, to be honest. I mean,
I think Bethesda was definitely the better choice.
yeah, although,
Even though we had to get past Redfall.
yeah, well, to be fair, Starfield didn't get a nod in Game of the Year at all, which is an interesting point.
I think Starfield is too much like I think Starfield is a good game, but it is not a great like
Yeah, I don't think it
in a
was a
year
good
like
game. Yeah,
this, it
it's
doesn't
tough to hit
pretend.
for that. We're looking at, and just for our Patreon listeners out there, we're looking to do a bit of a spoiler cast for some of these games towards the end of the year to cover off while we're on holiday break. So keep tuned for that, and also give us some money.
So the interesting discussion, like just before we jump off Starfield, I do want to say, back when it was meant to release in 2021,
different story.
If Bethesda hadn't been acquired and it was a typical RPG that got put out, I honestly do think it would have been a Game of the Year contender.
We'll talk about it, because I have a lot of thoughts about Starfield as the year's gone on.
I mean, I think a lot...
I haven't finished that.
I think a lot of it stems into the fact that just an Xbox audience. But I also will say that there's a lot of bad titles this year.
Yeah, there are a lot of really good games.
Like, that's only part of my reasoning for it. Anyway. Yeah, Forza. So Forza Motorsport got an update that made it tougher to unlock the... essentially, you got to reach level 50, 30 cars. You could just do it... you could just leave it running. Unfortunately, they patched that out. So, like, it's 15 minutes auto racing at a time.
So, it has, like, are you still there button.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, that would be mostly to combat people in online races messing about that system, though, not you sitting in a private lobby by yourself running around a track.
Yeah, because you used to be able to just put it on the friction menu, so you just go down the D-pad across the friction and you'd be able to just like leave it running. And luckily I got all the 50 cars done and I've only got like 10 achievements left, but it's gonna suck for anybody that has to do it. Like,
I have to do it still. Yeah
I was kind of like, oh, this is one of those things I don't want to sit on. Anyway, yeah, quick story of that. Did you guys hear about the Killer Instinct stuff?
Yeah, they're making it free to play, right?
So they announced that the Anniversary Edition will come out to celebrate the game's 10th birthday, coming as a free update for Definitive Edition owners. I'm pretty sure they did like a live stream or something, showing off the Anniversary variant that would include 29 fighters, and almost all premium Killer Instinct content. Some mature rated content like the Definitive Edition app, Xbox KI Classic 1 and 2 won't be available in the Anniversary Edition. Though current Definitive Edition owners will keep all their existing content, including the mature stuff. So just a quick note with that potential delisting. I'm not sure. Superbod said there was some DLC or some skin content that already...
There's stuff that's not included. Yeah. There's a few things you might need to poke about with and just compare before it comes out.
Yeah. Or if you wanted to get those classic editions. But there was some rumors about some new Killer Instinct stuff being done. To me, this doesn't seem like anything close to that, though.
No.
I'm wondering if it was a case of Chinese whispers and...
Maybe. I mean... I don't know. Killer Instinct has never been huge for Xbox, right?
So interesting thing about it, though, is that the base game for free has the one rotating weekly fighter, but they've also taken away the ability to buy fighters individually.
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, cool. You can wait for a week that you... I mean, we played these games before where you can kind of pop in on an odd week where there's a fighter you want to play with.
Yeah.
And actually play as that fighter, but I can't think of any games as an example, but there's definitely a handful that do it. But
wasn't
it's
there
just
a Dead
like
or Alive that
Dead or Alive did it.
I still have it installed. Need to get that last achievement.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, I mean, isn't that where the money comes from? Like, you buying kind of like, it's kind of tasting the different fighters and you kind of choosing what you want.
Usually, yeah. I mean, like, you can 100% do that in Dead or Alive 5. Like, it's...
Yeah.
In Game Pass, right?
Yeah.
It might just be Game Pass. Might just be Game Pass fodder at this point. Like, I... These was Iron Galaxy originally, and I'm pretty sure they got purchased.
True.
Did they? I don't actually know much about Iron Galaxy other than...
I feel like...
Dave Lang.
These didn't it swap to another company after a little bit?
It was either that or there was some port upgrading that was going on.
Yeah, because it got moved to a different maintenance studio. Was Iron Galaxy the one who were the maintenance studio or the ones who made it? It's been a while since I looked at it.
I felt like they're the ones that made it, but they're a
They also
maintenance
made
studio
Dive
now.
Kick, which is one of the greatest games of all time.
Extinction, Rumbleverse.
Dive Kick. Rebel One.
I forgot that they worked on Rumbleverse. Anyway. So just, yeah. Killer Instinct. I need to go back to it. It's a good game.
Yeah.
Big project game, but yeah. All right, moving along. Xbox Rewards, Weekly Streaks, and that could be coming to an end.
Yeah,
so
they've done, been
yeah.
doing some beta updates in, I think it's live on my dash, actually. Like, there's little, like, rewards section has been changing kind of constantly, the update. So
over the last year, Microsoft has been removing various punch cards and slashing the number of earnable points from the Microsoft Rewards app on Xbox. Now it looks like Microsoft will soon discontinue the app along with the weekly set task in favor of the new rewards hub introduced earlier this year. I haven't even dealt with the rewards app.
I just push the button when it says I've done something because I played a Game Pass game or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool.
It seems that the writing has kind of been on the wall with the Microsoft rewards app on Xbox. The app has been gutted over the last 12 months. With Microsoft removing punch cards and tasks, looking at now in the UK, the only tasks left are weekly rewards set and the shop and earn promo, and it's become a bit of a wasteland. Yeah, just a bit disappointing. I mean, yeah, I did use it at one point in time, but I've been using it less and less.
Well, rewards really isn't going away because it pushes so much Bing engagement for Bing. So it's like everybody daily going on there, getting their stuff. It's just full engagement. So,
but not true engagement because no one would use Bing otherwise.
I pretty much exclusively use Bing actually. So,
you're that type of person.
Yes. I was using it before there was a rewards.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah, okay. Fucking Bing hipster.
All right. Honest question to the community: what is your browser of choice?
I use Firefox.
I use Chrome and Firefox.
I use Firefox exclusively.
Actually, I've been testing Opera a little bit too. Opera's not too bad.
Really? On your like Wii console?
What is that meant to mean?
Opera's Twitter account is some of the funniest shit I've ever read on the internet. I highly, highly recommend you go check out this shit.
Are we talking like Duolingo kind of?
Better than Duolingo, like the social media manager for Opera.
Oh, actually, yeah, I did see the social media. Like, I got fired first.
Actually unhinged, like an actual crazy person. And I love it. I know it's like, hey, fellow kids, brand stuff, but it's still fucking hilarious. Ask Jeeves, yeah, exactly.
Jeez. Not really much else to say about the reward stuff. We'll just let you know once it does come to end. Interesting one, like less Xbox focus, but something that I really wanted to bring up from the past. So the Simpsons Hit and Run publisher said no to a deal to make five more Simpsons games. And I just wanted to take you down a trip down memory lane because I read this and I was immediately sad. So in an interview with Min-Max, the game's producer, John McClure, was asked what happened to the planned Hit and Run 2 game, which was in the works of Radical Entertainment, who had developed the first game. McClure explained that at least two Simpsons games were in development and that the publisher, Vivendi Universal Games, was given the option to make five, but rejected it. Simpsons Hit and Run 2 would have been done by Radical, and there was a medieval Simpsons game that Matt Groening pitched, which was being done at Stormfront after Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
The biggest crime was that Vivendi did not obtain the Simpsons license, though they had an offer in. The Simpsons came back with an offer, five games for X amount of dollars, and it was a really good deal, and Vivendi said no after the success of Hit and Run. Asked why Vivendi turned down the deal, McCall said he didn't know, but confirmed that work had already begun on the sequel. They did games like Cold Winter and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So to everybody's credit, the sequel had airships, planes. They had a lot going on. It was going to be a franchise, and there was no doubt in anybody's mind. And then essentially EA came in, paid $80 million for the license, and then eventually just made the Simpsons game.
Just one, yeah.
Yeah, just the one Simpsons game. So I read this and I was like, We need Hit and Run. We need like something like Hit and Run back.
Yeah.
I love those kind of games growing up.
I really enjoyed Hit and Run, but I also think it was of a time. I don't know if it would work super well today. I mean,
Yeah,
maybe.
I mean, the best thing about Hit and Run was, I think, if you played on Christmas and stuff like that, it was actually like snowing and things like that. It had like little secret things you could do with your PS2,
Yeah.
like changing the date, different days and stuff for Halloween and stuff like that as well. So,
See, there's. I'm trying to think of a game that kind of like captures the nostalgic of the original. You know what? Actually, the SpongeBob games, that
yeah, the
like Cosmic
Cosmic
Shake,
Shake.
yeah, like that kind of stuff. It's very reminiscent of those like PS2 kind of entries, and I wouldn't mind having some games that kind of like relive that nostalgia. Yeah, McDonald, you said like Simpsons Road Rage, Crazy Taxis. The Crazy Taxi Simpsons game, that was
That was Road Rage.
yeah,
I think
Road Rage, yeah.
McNulty
Road
was
Rage, yeah.
replying. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, if they have that existing relationship with Vivendi, I mean that's Activision, so
Oh man, wouldn't that just be amazing, a whole bunch of Simpsons games coming to Game Pass?
I mean, maybe
I know
I would
you don't really watch that
actually
animation
like
now, do you?
I don't I'm not like I watched a lot of Simpsons when I was younger, but like
So
I was
apparently Atari's been buying up a bunch of older nostalgia based content, like going back and getting like a hold of a bunch of games and stuff like that.
well
Probably
they
so.
just put out
They canceled the hotel, right?
Well, no,
Atari,
they
Atari, we're doing a hotel.
What are you on about?
What? Really?
You didn't know Atari, Atari.
No.
Oh, you guys need to okay. Yeah, I thought you guys knew about
I
this.
no, I'm completely just confused
Sorry,
right
yes.
now.
After the show, I don't want to sidetrack it, but you guys should Google
Okay.
the Atari Hotel. They were literally had a hotel that was like video game based.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Atari just recently put out a console.
Course they did.
Like a release, like they got like miniature versions of their like classic games. It
Oh
was,
God. Okay. Yeah.
yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway, just that nostalgia hit, you know?
Oh, sure. But that's like the Atari of today is a zombie that was
Yeah.
basically.
The games that I want to see come back are the Acclaim games from the S Super Nintendo, I think, and stuff like that. Yeah. There was some really, really good banger Simpson games on there was a virtual reality kind of, what was that? Simpsons, there's some really, really good stuff. Like, yeah. Those 2D side scrolling ones, so good. There was like a Krusty Lemmings style game as
Oh, yeah, I
well.
remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I finished, I 100% that thing. I love that so much, going back through the levels in that game. So, yeah.
Virtual Bart. Ah,
Virtual
jeez.
Bart, yes, that's the
Yeah.
one. That was one of my favorite games. So, yeah.
Yeah. So Atari 2600 plays the original carts, comes with four carts that you can toggle a switch on the back to choose which game they play. Yeah, wasn't there a Bart Simpson versus Space Aliens game?
I think there was,
Material.
yeah. Yeah.
All my history is like PS2 days or like GameCube. Actually, I'm pretty sure I had Hit and Run on GameCube. Anyway, yeah, I thought it was a man, it was just one of those things like I just wanted a nostalgia trip. All right, quickly just rounding up the rest of the news. Modern Warfare 3 developer is investigating an exploit that lets you play sprint while lying prone.
Just do the worm.
Yeah, it's called Snake 2.0.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, is it exclusively in a certain mode, like online multiplayer, or
Probably multiplayer,
there's
I'd
been a few
assume.
controversies with Modern Warfare 3 over the last couple of weeks.
Like the fact that it's shit, apparently.
Well, actually, a bit of side news on the Modern Warfare stuff. They did send emails out to people who had played the game saying that they had the most engagement across Modern Warfare Zombies. And I was looking up some creators after that, and they were actually saying, and in their comments, people were confirming that they were actually enjoying that mode. And I, yeah, spoiler, I've been playing Modern Warfare pretty much. It's been one of the only things I've played outside of my stream games. So I can talk a little bit about that. So.
Oh, I definitely want to hear more. I mean, I'm gonna have to play it because they fucking released it as DLC. So,
What a I'm worried about Activision Blizzard games now. We're gonna get a whole
yeah.
bunch of stuff added to Game Pass, and we're just not gonna be able to. It's just gonna be the subscription that keeps on giving.
Yeah, that's the to the end of
Anyway.
days.
Isn't that no, I'm not gonna go.
Okay. All right. Last news story was something that I added from last week. Just quick notice for like 12 Xbox games soon to have server closures. We've got Gundam Evolution coming up on the 29th. Rocket League on December 5th will have some achievements impacted with play-to-play items trading affected. So if you want to grab them now, it's probably going to be the easiest time to do it. Then you've
Yeah, you have to trade like a. I recently did this, like an actual like. There are legacy versions of items that are untradeable, and then you have to get one that is tradable as well. But you can actually double up on a couple of these things if you have the item that's being traded is a painted item. There's an achievement for getting a painted item, and if you are in, I believe if you were in the trade menu with somebody who has a maxed out legacy, like a one of the items, you have to get an achievement where you have to play X, do X amount of like saves or whatever with an item to max level it, essentially. And that particular item, if that's in the trade menu, a friend of ours, Kiku, found out that if you're actually in the trade menu and you put that in the trade menu, it actually also unlocks that
Oh,
achievement for
okay,
the other
right.
person without actually trading it, which is really interesting. There's a couple of things like that, but you have to be level 20 to or 30. You have to be level 30 to even be able to trade. So you've
Right.
got to get on that now. And the
Yeah.
Halloween event was the best thing for that. I was just playing that just constantly and leveling up really quickly. So, not long left.
So yeah, we have Rocket League. What else do we have? Whole bunch of EA stuff. So Battlefield 1943, Bad Company 1 and 2, Mirror's Edge, Mirror's Edge Catalyst. Original Mirror's Edge doesn't have any achievements impacted.
Yeah, it will get rid of the replays though, so you'll have to go to YouTubers and stuff like that to kind of see their runs and things. So I believe
Just
anyway.
look at how much better they are than me playing that fucking game. Dead Space 2 also doesn't have any achievements impacted. Crisis 3, Dante's Inferno, both from December 8th. Oh, man, I'm probably just going to let that final achievement for what is it? Saint Lucia?
Yeah, Saint Lucia,
Yeah.
the one that
I'm probably just not going to bother. Just do
you
this.
can do it.
You could totally do it.
One achievement? Nah. Not worth it.
I managed to do it. You'll be fine.
Not worth it.
We managed to do it somehow together. It was a
Yeah, we
mess,
got it.
but
We got it.
yeah.
Anyway, Anvil Vault Breaker, NBA 2K22, and NBA 2K22 Xbox One on December 31st. So just a quick FYI if you want to jump on any of those. I think there was somebody looking for Crisis 3 help in the Discord yesterday as well. So yeah. Right. You want me to quickly smash through Game Pass updates?
Yeah, just do it.
All right. We've got Coral Island, Persona 5 Tactica. Both have already hit Game Pass. We also have Dune Spice Wars and Rollerdrome coming out on November 28th. I'm very excited for Rollerdrome. Leaving, we have Anvil Vault Breaker, Battlefield 1943, Battlefield Bad Company 1 and 2, which I just quickly mentioned from the games that having server closures. We've got Grid, which
May actually
potentially.
be delisted. So
Okay.
it's not just leaving Game Pass, it may be one of the delisting ones. So if you want that, which there's achievements I think tied to the DLC, which is like the Ultimate Edition or whatever, which may also be digital only, but there is a disc out there, I
There is a
believe.
physical. I do own a physical. So,
So
yeah,
just
if
be
you,
very careful with that one if you want
yeah,
that.
definitely look
Codemasters.
into the DLC.
Yeah.
And then we've got Discroom and Eastwood leaving Game Pass as well.
Yep.
Cool. All
All
right.
right, you're
Shoot.
gonna hang 10?
Yeah, all right. Let's swap over to this one. Give me 2 seconds. So I was fortunate enough to get granted a code for Barton Lynch Pro Surfing from the Indie XP on behalf of Bunawara Software, which is I believe, a Western Australian developer. And essentially, it's just a surfing simulator. So I want to just I've got a few nice things to say about it, and I've got a few not as nice things to say about it. So starting off, you've got like your typical character creator. Or you can pick one of your like preset pro surfers, which will have like much better management. Well, they'll have better stats for paddling stamina, turning, balance, that kind of stuff. Typical modes like tutorial, free surf, world tours, where you get money, and then you can build your reputation to get better equipment and better surfers. You take care of your surfers, like giving them like massages and like physical therapy, which, yep,
Oh,
cool.
it's that kind of surfing game. I see. I see.
Yeah, just that kind of surfing game. Yeah. So yeah, once you get the hang of it, like I will say the surfing does feel pretty good, like when you can manage it. It does take a little bit to kind of get a feel for the controls.
Cameron, game audio is apparently too loud. Can't.
Oh, is it going through? Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. All right. Should I start over or?
No, that's fine. Just keep going.
Therefore. Yeah, so essentially with it, it's very much that kind of feel like you get from a Tony Hawk game, yeah? Like once you get a hang for the gameplay, you can score some big combos, that kind of stuff. But for the most part, it was like actually trying to manage like going through the tube. Like the controls weren't the exact like best, but like out of everything in this game, I think the it's like less of an arcade kind of surfer and
More like
more of a
simulation style.
simulation style. Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, you're trying to score that decent combo, progress through the world tours, and a lot of the achievements in this game are like win a world tour as Barton Litch, win a world tour as X Surfer, create a custom character, unlock certain like certain upgrades. You're that kind of typical game. The biggest issue I have with the game is retail wise, this is like $90 to $100 a strain.
Oh,
Yeah, so this is a
yeah.
full priced, this is a like full priced sports title that, and like as you can see here, the graphics aren't the best. Like this is 360, like PS3 grade
It's
graphics.
no
So
Sea of Thieves,
no,
basically.
this is
Sure,
what I'm saying.
yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, so like I would understand that like the licensing fees for the surfers and that would come into this, but like if you're putting out a price tag like that, it's not justifiable to have this kind of graphics,
It would have
even
been
if.
really nice to have great water. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, like.
like considering that's so much of the game.
Yeah, like that's it's very, I don't say like it's very one-dimensional, but like you are like just working around, surfing. If the like thankfully the gameplay is good, but looking at these graphics, I would be very disappointed if I put my money into this.
Shame.
Yeah, which is a shame because like once you do get the hang of it, like it is good. I will say like I'm personally more of a fan of the arcade stuff. Like I broke number of surfboards playing this, but like when I did get the hang of it was pretty easy to like score and move on to the next round. It was just that like wear down on the surfer and the surfboard over time. Going through, so when you're surfing and you're going through the tube though, the biggest problem for me is your vision will just be like you'll have water in front of you, and I don't know how much of it is intent like is intentional.
Is it like camera issues?
Yeah, it's like it's camera issues. And it just makes it very hard to know where you're meant to be navigating. But I don't know if it's intentional because, like, I don't know if in surfing it's you're meant to have
Yeah,
impaired
it's almost like
vision.
if there was like if it's centered around you being in the tube instead of just having the water covered with the screen and you can't really
Yeah.
see what you're doing,
Yeah,
essentially.
there's too many moments where you're like, you can't see what you're doing, then you venture right. And then you immediately you just get taken out by the like
You
the
just
wall or tube.
bail, yeah.
Yeah, so man, it's like the gameplay is there, but for something that was, I believe, in early access for quite a portion of this year. Yeah, the gameplay does sorry, the not the gameplay, the graphics do need a vast improvement. I haven't shown it here, but like it is one of those fun things though, where you just mess around with the character creator and just go wild.
Right.
There is quite a bit of selection there, but it is typical of a PS3 360 era looking game. But yeah, any questions, comments, thoughts?
I mean, this is the first time I've seen a surfing game in a long time. You know, I feel like back
oh,
in the
Kelly Slater was the last one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Kelly Slater was the last one I can kind of remember. I think like the PS2 era kind of had a few of them.
I think the only way you could get surfing, I think I saw one of the reviews mentioned, like the Sonic versus Mario.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like that. That's the only way you could get a surfing game.
Sure.
But yeah, like Kelly Slater would have been the last thing that I could think of as well. It's just not so just, yeah, for people watching along, like just how the wave just washes over them is just impossible to see and like navigate. So you'll get some really good waves that you can easily score big combos off, but there's a lot of stuff too that you've just like, you're just traveling to one point trying to manage it. And I don't think it leads to the funnest experience that you could, especially like this kind of price. I'd love to be able to have like both a simulation and like an arcade kind of mode. But yeah, I unless this comes down heavily in price, I would not advise picking it up.
Not fair
Which
enough.
Is yeah, disappointing, but hopefully they get onto much better things or make a, you know, make some upgrade.
Like a 2024 edition.
Oh yeah, just start ranking out the yearly releases.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, something like this really needs to emulate the feeling of surfing, like in the movies and stuff like that. I think like putting cinematic angles on the surfing. Like, I think to really kind of push out the tone of the surfing vibe, I think. So,
yeah. Like, I mean, like, when it's working fine.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want to see those kind of games that you just, like, ride, like just ride the wave in an arcadey kind of sense. But, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, not as good as I was hoping. But, yeah. Should we go through what we've been playing?
Go for it.
I'm just waiting for Matt to put his headset back on. Cool. All right, Matt, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, all right. So what have I been playing?
Yeah.
So not a huge amount of the last couple of weeks. I've been very, very busy, but I got into the Castlevania Advance Collection. I don't think I've talked about it before.
No, I don't think you have either.
Yeah, actually, a couple of weeks, like I was the episode with Just Jake I just watched, and you talked about that. And I'm like, oh, it'd be really good to kind of go back into Castlevania stuff.
Yeah, I forgot how much I really love Castlevania. Those like playing through the Advance Collection, I had a really, really good time. It's yeah, because they released the Anniversary Collection, which I also own. I haven't started it yet, but it has like the original like kind of eight games or releases that they put out, and then the Advance Collection has the four games, well, three and a port. That they brought out on the Game Boy Advance. So you had, fuck, now I'm forgetting what they're called, which is really Circle of the Moon. Damn it. Harmony of Dissonance, I think. And then the last one is Area of Sorrow. Very much kind of in that Metroidvania vein. They're all very clear sort of pseudo sequels to Symphony of the Night, very heavily inspired by that. I mean, Iga worked on two of them, and they're all fantastic games. So, like, they kind of have different. It's interesting to see because they came out like 1 year apart from each other, which is weird to think about now. It's like, yeah, like we haven't had a Castlevania game since what, like 2014 or something. Yeah. It's like,
is that like the what was it called?
Lords of Shadows, the trilogy they did. Yeah, like that. That was the last thing that they did. That was on the 360. And we haven't seen anything since then, which is insane to think about. But yeah, your sort of standard Metroidvania side scrollers boil down to like their most pure form. I would say kind of this is like, I like Symphony of the Night is one of my favorite games ever. This is just kind of more of that same. I still think that like Area of Sorrow, the last one, is probably where they nailed it. Like, they got the music right, they got the castle right. They got like introduced all the interesting new powers and a lot of that stuff. If you've played Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, like you see a lot of that DNA from Dawn of Sorrow.
Okay.
From Area of Sorrow. Dawn of Sorrow is the, what I'm hoping they do is release I don't know, like what they'll call it, like the DS collection or whatever, where they have the next three games, which is Dawn of Sorrow, Portrait of Ruin, and Order of Ecclesia, which were kind of the last three side-scrolling Metroidvanias that they did.
Yeah, which they've already done with the one that was on the DS for the 360 games.
Oh yes, yeah, they did. Yes, they did with Mirror of Fate. Yeah, sort of the 1.5 game between Lords of Shadow 1 and 2, which I also need to go back and finish because it's really difficult. But yeah, highly, highly recommend it. It was a great collection. The achievements are relatively straightforward. It has this nice rollback feature where essentially like you can do save states and you can also roll back. Like you have like a timeline. So if you fuck something up, you can roll it back a couple of seconds.
Like similar to the like Lion King.
That. Yeah, basically that's the same kind of thing. So so the game's quite easy for the most part because you can kind of cheese your way around it. Yeah. But had a great time with it. I love the stories. I love all that mythology stuff. I love the interesting monster designs and the cool powers that you get and just kind of, you know, the grim dark bullshit from especially the first one they put out. Yeah, definitely recommend it. Good collection. I'll quickly flip through the other two things I've been playing. I finished Slime Rancher. And so I finished that this afternoon, went back. I've been playing a little bit of that over the last couple of weeks. It's been on my sort of Games with Gold collection backlog for like 5 years or something. I think I started in like 2017 or something. A fun little game. Not really my kind of game for the most part. I like the aesthetic, but it is kind of has that like... It's a slightly more action version of your standard kind of Stardew Valley farming stuff. Like it's a lot more truncated in that, like it's more about collecting the slimes, putting them into corrals, growing things to feed them. And then kind of, it's interesting because it's like the idea is that you get one type of slime, and if you feed it a plort, which is like if you feed a slime a piece of food, it will create a plort, which you can sell. But if you feed that plort to another slime, it will become a combination of the two slimes. And so the idea is that you want to, but the thing is, if you combine three, it becomes this big monstrosity thing that overtakes everything and kills everything. So you can only make, you can't make threes. You can only make twos.
Yep.
And so the idea is you want to build like corrals of like, okay, well, I combine like the exploding one with the honey one. And when I feed it their favorite food, it puts out a exploding plort and a honey plort, and those excel for a lot. So it's kind of like, you kind of like set up, it's more like a farming game as you're more of like an animal farmer as opposed to like a crop farmer. And it has like little exploration elements and kind of going around the world and kind of finding like hidden secrets and stuff. And like, it's really well made and was in early access for a long time. And I enjoyed it. It just kind of wears a little bit.
I think it's one of those like perfect kids games though, because like I've seen Percy play it before and I've seen the kids' cousins and they love it just because of how simple and.
Yeah. Yeah. And the aesthetic's nice. And like, there's a casual mode if you want, that kind of makes it a little bit easier as well. And yeah, David points out, can't make threes, only make twos as this valve. Yeah, exactly. Well, Slime Rancher 2 is out now. I haven't played it yet. I think it's still in game preview. Don't think it is.
Yeah, still in game preview. I don't think it has achievements yet. So.
But I'm very interested to see what they do with it. I don't know if I'll be jumping on it straight away, but you know, maybe we'll see. But it was good to get it done. And then the last one, which is kind of the main thing I've been playing this week, has been Eastwood.
You're not going to talk about the other one?
I figure you'll talk about that, right?
Yeah, okay, cool.
So I've been playing Eastward, which is, I had no idea what to expect. It's leaving Game Pass, like we mentioned. And I was like, okay, high ratio, lot of like, looks like some like achievements, like a lot of like relatively easy achievements for story stuff, but there's like five achievements in there that have very, very low completion numbers. So I was like, shit, there might be some difficult stuff in here. Yeah. Turns out it's more kind of annoying than difficult. I wasn't sure what kind of game this was. This is Zelda. This is Link to the Past. It is a top-down Link to the Past game set in a post-apocalyptic world where you are basically on, you're on a journey to the east as opposed to the west.
So you're not Westward, you're Eastward.
You're Eastward, exactly. There you go, right? Well, it's like, you know, it's always Journey to the West with Monkey, right? But now it's Journey to the East. They're turning
this
it on.
This just takes me back to Isaac's question. It's just all in the title.
It is. It's all in the title. Yeah, exactly.
This right? must speak to every single anime fan out there.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a good 10-hour game that took me 25 hours to get through.
Too much bloat? Too much bloat?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there, like gameplay-wise, it has essentially, it is a twin stick shooter and that kind of like top down style of like Link to the Past, where it's like, you know, enemies come at you and various things you need to, you have a pan that works like a sword, and then you have like bombs, and then you have like alternate weapons like a flamethrower, a shotgun, and then you get like a saw blade blaster towards the end of the game. And kind of you find chests to like, you get salt. Salt is like the currency, it's like rupees. So you get salt crystals. Again, it's very like very tongue in cheek. Like Zelda is a huge influence on this game. So much so that when you solve a puzzle, it does like a do-do-do-do-do-do like sound
Yeah.
thing. You get like pieces of heart. Like it is, yeah, wears it on its sleeve.
Take rupees out of jars.
You kind of, yeah, you smash jars to get salt out of it. And there's a lot of hidden secrets. It has a chapter select, so it's kind of not too bad, but you definitely want to have a collectible guide up for this, because there are 102 chests in the game. You need to open every single one of them, and if you miss one, you need to figure out where it was. So you can chapter select now, but it won't tell you which chapter you might have missed something on. You also need to eat every type of food and cook every type of food, and it also has like the, you know, like in Breath of the Wild, where it has that like the fun little cooking sound music thing where you cook something. Does that too. So you cook things. There's like 35 recipes that you make. You need to eat every single one of them. So you need to have like a checklist. And then each of the stores will sell a certain amount of food, but only in certain chapters. Unfortunately, it's a very guide heavy kind of game. Neo Seeker has a good walkthrough for the most part. There's a couple of chests that they're a little bit iffy on, so make sure you check the comments or there's a Steam guide for it.
I hate when games don't have it like included in their kind of like menus and that.
Yeah.
Just because you always have like an update that will break something or change a particular chest of that. And then the guide's just always
Yeah,
outdated in that regard.
it's unfortunate. Yeah, and like the guide is a little bit outdated, because like when the guide came out, the game didn't have a chapter select, but they brought it out afterwards. So it's a bit more accessible now. But the combat is relatively straightforward. You kind of play as one of two characters. You can kind of switch between them and have slightly different abilities. And the whole thing is that you kind of start in, you start to the west, you start in like an underground, and then you kind of go out. You get basically get. An event happens and you have to go out into the world. And I won't spoil any more than that, because the story is kind of the driving force. The problem with the story is that it's quite slow. There's also like no skip cutscene. There's no speed up the dialogue stuff. You just kind of have to sit there and watch the stuff. And like most of it's fine, but it's a little bit. I really could have done with a 1.5 speed on a lot of this stuff. You know, like I felt like it was just like, okay, like I get it. It's cute and it's interesting. The dialogue is quite funny. But I'm kind of like, okay, I kind of want to get back into it and start doing some stuff. Especially chapter three. Chapter three really drags. Yeah, the only other th real thing to mention about it is that like the story is quite interesting. It's about like a post-apocalyptic world, and kind of there's like this mystery element of like what's going on in this world, why is the world this way, and kind of like unexplained things happening, and kind of how do things end up this way. That kind of does somewhat explore and explain, but also leaves a lot up to interpretation and mystery, which I don't mind for some games, but this is the kind of game where I was like, look, come on, give me a fucking answer at the end of it. Like, explain some of it. Like, it doesn't need to end on like a question mark, you know? It also contains a roguelike JRPG old style like Dragon Quest game in it. Yeah, which is like, so like it has a little mini game called Eastbourne. Sorry, no, Earthbourne. So Earthbourne, it's a Dragon Quest essentially. And you basically play as a hero who has to go around a map and collect a bunch of heroes. And you only have 7 days before a ritual that's going to end the world's going to happen. So you basically need to go around beating up enemies, gaining levels, collecting characters, getting equipment, that kind of stuff before that happens. And then you go and fight a boss. And then essentially you need to do it again in like a new game plus mode, which is like more difficult, and do more stuff. It's like a roguelite. So essentially, like if you collect the characters and like unlock fast travel spots, they will retain over your playthrough. Because if like after the 7 days, if you lose, you got to start back at day one. It's very like old school JRPG. Like it's like turn based, three characters in the front, two in the back, doing like spells and stuff. Like hit points, attack points, or like action points and items, and that's it. The kind of interesting wrinkle is that throughout the game, you get tokens to put into a gacha machine and to get like capsules, and every capsule that you get gives you an item in the game. So depending on the rarity of the capsule, it'll give you a better item. So like the best one is like one that stuns an enemy for like an entire turn. So like I had like 10 of those at the end of the game and used them on like the final boss and just wiped him without him hitting me once. Which is there. So like it's interesting. But and those get you they're like they're items, so they get returned if you start the game again. But you only get like a certain amount of them for whatever. So like you can kind of do things outside of the game to give you advantages inside the game. But the problem is tied to this fucking gacha thing where it's like you gotta put tokens in, get a thing out, and you're like, okay, but also you need to get all of the tokens for all the capsule monsters. The fucking Pokemon. You have to get all of the Pokemon.
Of course you do.
Yeah, you have to get all 20 Pokemon and then all 20 of the variants of the Pokemon as well. So 40 in total. And it's just like it's pure RNG. I loaded the game probably about 50 times just trying to make sure that I got the right ones and didn't use up all my tokens because there are limited tokens in the game. And then like in like the seventh out of eighth chapter, you can buy tokens for like 25 salt, but also that's like really expensive. So you'll end up grinding a bunch. So you either have to save scum it or you like it just it was an interesting idea that just really like on top of like the bloat that I was talking about for the rest of the game, I just really was not having a great
Just
time.
stretched it out.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And having to do it twice is kind of not great. It's the kind of thing where like if you didn't really care about achievements, like I think you could just kind of do a playthrough of like one through one all chapters, kind of just do it once, cook the things that you need to cook, find the things that you find and have a decent time with it and finish in like 20 hours. But it took me like closer to 30 with all the extra shit I had to do and just kind of was like by the end of it, I was like, okay, I was kind of done with this like 5, 6 hours ago, which is a bit of a shame. But I am glad they got through it and, you know, got it before it left Game Pass and it's still got a pretty high ratio. So happy about that. I know that Shane's playing through it at the moment. So I'm curious to hear his thoughts once he finishes it. But that's pretty much everything I've been playing. I'll just kind sort of get through all that now. Want to hear about Cocoon.
Yep, so I finally went back to Cocoon. I finished Cocoon. I really enjoy it. Like I don't know how much you want to say about Cocoon. I thought the gameplay element of it was amazing. I played as much of it as I could without a guide. I think I got to like the third level and I put Welsh Hunter on because I thought, okay, this is gonna just stretch out way too much.
Oh, come on, man.
But no, it was
Weak.
yeah. No, but like it was good. I don't know. I with those kind of puzzle games, it gets to a point where I do need to just rely on a guide, otherwise you just get frustrated with it. Like I kind of want to just be shown the answer and replicate the answer rather than have to spend too long to figure it out. But gaming time's limited. You
Yeah,
gotta
I
try and
suppose
finish.
that is fair. Yeah, I can understand
But like just in terms of a gameplay mechanic, Cocoon is fucking amazing. It's just like, how do you conceptualize an idea like this?
that. It blew my
And
mind so many times playing through the game where it's like they did like one mechanic and I was like, oh, that's smart. I was like, oh, okay, you can, oh, okay, yep, okay. And then I was like, oh, that's a gate. And you go through the gate and you're like, wait a minute. How the fuck did I? And then you're like, wait, but then what happens if I do this? And then if I do that, and then like at the last bit, it's like, hey, let's just do full recursion. Let's just see what happens.
it's just that game too that like encourages. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't think there was that many moments where you can't mess something up. Like,
Yeah, it's.
there's the right path,
Yeah,
but like
exactly.
you can't go down like an avenue and have to backtrack because you've made so many mistakes.
The game was really good about like after you'd finished using something, it would be like, oh, it would disappear, it would close off or whatever to tell you that like, hey, you don't need to use this, you've done it, you've solved it, like this isn't part of the puzzle anymore, you got it, move on.
And just like that world design, incorporating that into the puzzle is just absolutely amazing. I mean, like, look, I'm gonna say like there's games like Dredge again, which are like better games for me personally, but I still like appreciate the level of detail of something in Cocoon. I guess the only comment I would make is like I do like the aesthetic of the world. But some of it does feel, what's the right word? It feels a bit assety to me,
Sure. Yeah,
like
I
in
get
terms
it.
of the
It
looks.
it's like
But that's it.
spaceshipy. Yeah, I
Yeah,
get it. Yeah.
it's kind of like pre-rendered asset kind of stuff that it's kind of like, all right, cool. It's the serviceable for the game. The game is all about the gameplay and the mechanics. But you think of games like Inside and Limbo and that, where it's a lot more aesthetic heavy. And that I'm still getting the aesthetic from the game, but it's not as serviceable. Sorry, it's more serviceable than a game like Limbo.
Inside in particular, I think is very, very much in that vein, yeah.
But I think that's all the comments I really have. Oh, and just the boss fights. Like
Boss fights are really
incorporating
cool.
incorporating the end of the boss fights was really cool. I didn't struggle with the boss fights at actually. I think the first one was probably the hardest, and then everything
Yeah,
else was easy.
pretty much the same for me.
Yeah, I think it was just like picking up your like
Yeah.
picking up as you go.
It does a really good job of showing you something how, like an example of how to do something before you actually have to do it, which is kind of really
Yeah.
nice.
Yeah,
So.
for a game with basically no text, no dialogue, nothing, like it's all very much like show don't tell in a way that's really like that's what I really appreciated about the game is that like that's how I got through those last levels was like I trusted that the game wouldn't try and fuck me on something and would be like the solution is there and I've probably seen it before, I just haven't put it together in my head.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it for Cocoon.
All right, I want to hear about Modern Warfare 3 as well because I'm I after what you
Yeah.
said, Kia, I'm just like, okay, I need to know
Okay,
what's.
so I jumped in and did one or two multiplayer matches. I never played multiplayer in Modern Warfare 2, the original. I didn't bother with that, so I wasn't really at the point where I was doing multiplayer in Call of Duties back then. So I don't know the maps. The maps seem okay. I mean, like they are obviously classic maps, but they do feel kind of really empty, even though you know there's a lot of people around. They're very open, in certain instances where I'm sure going back to the original Modern Warfare 2, you kind of see where that would come from. But yeah, so it was kind of like okay, it's just like there's nothing new to say about Call of Duty multiplayer. I haven't touched the campaign. I might be looking into doing because I haven't done Modern Warfare 2 or Modern Warfare 3 campaign. So I'd kind of like want to run through both games and then just see, maybe compare what would be longer and what's not. But the when I turn up on the game, basically I'm going straight into Modern Warfare Zombies. So what they've done with this is pretty much not what people wanted, but it's kind of what people
Fuck you.
it's what they
Needed.
get. So it is different. It is basically when you're looking at Warzone. I haven't compared the maps, but it's very reminiscent of the like the original Warzone kind of style map. So but I don't know exactly if it's like 1-to-1 or all of that, or apparently a lot of that Warzone map actually made it into the campaign as well, unfortunately, which is just reusing assets a lot. So they kind of reuse a lot of stuff. But essentially, you've got three zones. You've got a red hot zone in the middle, which is the most concentrated area for zombies. You've got like an orange area that kind of expands from that, where it's kind of the level two. So red was level three. Level two is kind of out on the outskirts of that. So going out from the center of the map, and the whole outside of the map is basically like a level one zone. That's where you spawn, that's where you jump in, and that's where you kind of do most of the work. So it's the same map every single time. Apparently they might be adding some more maps and stuff like that, but right now it's using the Modern Warfare 2 season that was currently running, and in December they're moving into the actual first Modern Warfare 3 season, which I
Right.
think doesn't carry back to Modern Warfare 2, apparently. I'm not quite sure.
Oh,
But
okay.
so all of the everything carries across every single mode, like ranking up your guns and all that kind of stuff. So it all kind of tinkers in. And around the map for zombies, you have basically areas you go to for like little mini missions. You activate like a speaker radio and you do something that might take 5 minutes. Like you have to throw like a beacon at some eggs and then it'll pulse on the eggs and that'll destroy like a shield around the eggs, like the shell coating. And then you shoot the eggs and you have to do like six or seven of them around the map. And you'll have stuff like escort the truck to a different location, or drive a truck to a different location to extract some stuff. So it doesn't really work like an extraction shooter or anything like that. You're basically in the world for an hour. Well, it's like 45 minutes, but then at the 45 minute part mark, you have 15 minutes to vacate the world, and then your shit starts getting really crazy,
Right. Okay.
essentially, in that last 15 minutes, and you have to kind of extract or you end up. I haven't gone, I think the countdown time went down to zero, but I don't know if it's a glitch or if it's part of what was supposed to happen, but it stayed at zero. And I'm
Oh.
like, oh, does this just get really, really bad and you just stay in this world or not, or what? Or do you? So I've only had done that once because I've extracted quite a few times. But it was just really weird. And I think if anyone in the chat knows a little bit more about going past that hour point, shout it out. But basically, you have to stay. You've only got an hour. You're forced to leave after, like, in that hour time. You have a progressive range of missions, where basically you just fulfill little objectives like run over 25 zombies in one match or something like that. And then once you tick all of the boxes, it'll have like extract or something, and then it moves on to the next mission. And eventually there's like three stories, so it's basically laid out in a bunch of different acts. But you really just have to do all the missions, and I believe there's a final cutscene and a final boss at the end of all of that. So
So
they've done,
there's sort of like multiple playthroughs
yeah,
or
like it's kind of, it's almost like, you're always in Call of Duty just fulfilling, like, you're trying to unlock banners and stuff, but you have to meet certain conditions.
you need to
It's
get the
basically
master
like,
sergeant shooter person.
yeah, exactly, like small versions of that, where but it's progressing a story. You have to hit each mark to progress the story, and it goes into through several acts of this. I haven't really done a whole lot. I've only done like one and a half. I've just been fooling around in the world and trying to level up. I think I'm like level 19 now. But then once you do all of that, there's apparently a really cool boss fight, and then they are adding more story to the game as well. So, and people apparently are really enjoying it, and it is fun, but it's very casual. Like, if you're hanging around the outside in that level one area, you're basically just chilling, and then you'll have a bunch of zombies that running at you, and then you're just chilling. So it's a very open map where you kind of just don't really have a lot going on unless you're really engaging and getting the missions. And because you have to do as much as possible in that first hour, and then extract to keep all your gear and stuff like that. So if you extract, you take that gear that you extracted with, and then you can then bring it back in. So if you get like a schematic for like the ray gun or something like that, you extract with that, and then you have a way to bring that ray gun in. The schematics, I believe, you get that, and then you can keep bringing it in, but there's like a 48-hour timer or something. I haven't got any schematics yet, but they're basically, I believe, gold wall buys on the. I think it costs about 5,000 or something in that red hot zone. And you take the schematic out, you extract, and then you basically keep that. And then every 48 hours, you can take a ray gun in to your match or something.
Oh, okay, cool.
So,
Cool.
so there is like a real progression in terms of like unlocking stuff and as well. But obviously, that stuff you're not taking over back over into multiplayer. But you all your guns level up and all that
So that
good
actually
stuff.
does
So.
sound quite fun. I mean, I'm assuming you can do co-op as well, right? And not just
You
single
can,
player.
yeah, four players. Actually, that's one of the things. So some of the things in the map, you do have zones where you'll have bosses that you need to kill, like mini bosses that have like you need four or five people to do. But if you have a squad of four, apparently you can link up and have and join with other squads in the game and make just mega squads,
Oh,
and then you
wow,
can
cool.
take that and go destroy a whole bunch of like the bosses and all that kind of stuff. But there's one of the achievements is use a squad of six to just to defeat like the
To
boss
kill
of
all of
the
us, yeah.
story or whatever. So yeah, so you can just make these big squads and go roll around and kill stuff. So yeah,
All right.
it's
So
fun. It's fun enough. So yeah.
the question I was going to ask, immediately think of like Black Ops 4 kind of stuff of like how much of these achievements are going to be very harder to get down the road, essentially, like.
I have gotten a handful just on my own. That six player achievement will need six people
Yeah, six
dedicated
people
to
is
it.
the only one that I'm kind of like,
I mean, the game
is
will
that
probably be
gonna.
on Game Pass sooner rather than later, though. So, you know,
Yeah, true.
I'm sure, you
Yeah.
know, Achievement Hunter community, we can manage it.
But the whole mode is a culmination of, whoa, Kobe, what are you doing on my keyboard? This is my cat, Kobe. So this is the first time he's ever done this, by the way.
Oh,
But he's wanting my attention. So
new sense of
he
sound in the making.
distracted now. It's a culmination of what you see in Blackout with the vehicles, right?
Yeah.
So rolling around the map and stuff like that. And then you also have the stuff from Cold War and those couple of games like Vanguard and stuff like that, where you had open maps where you just run around and do stuff.
Yeah, right.
So this is what I was saying about Redfall, where they really need to take the teams that build what's going on in these zombie modes and drag them through Redfall to create a world that has stuff in it. The playground stuff that they're doing in this game and that they started conceptually in Outbreak with Cold War is where Redfall should be,
Right.
basically. It's what that should be. And this is a perfect example of it. And if people are really enjoying it, engaging with it, and it will only get better and better and better, this will be a really, really solid mode, and be very positive. But yeah, basically, this is what I wanted Redfall to be. So, but yeah, so I think they're on the right track. So, but yeah, it definitely has the bones of Black Ops 4 and like Outbreak and stuff like that in there. So,
Well, the rumor is the next one they're doing is Black Ops, so.
yeah,
Before.
it's a
I'm pretty
like a
sure it's
Gulf
Switch,
War
yeah.
thing. So apparently, that's the rumor.
All
That's good.
right. Cameron, you've been playing a bunch of stuff. What else you got on your list?
What do you want me to go through first?
I mean, just quickly flick through RoboQuest and Dredge, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like, okay, so RoboQuest is essentially, I've talked about a lot of it last week. Somebody found out there was an exploit that if you kept on putting down the buddy bot over and over, the XP, sorry, the damage would exponentially increase, but it wouldn't tell you. Unfortunately, that got patched out before I could do the S rank.
Damn it.
But yeah, okay, so I'm going to do it legit. It's looking like the best way to go is an engineer build a cryo to freeze it. I got to, I'm at Guardian 2 at the moment. I need to get to Guardian 4 with S rank. And I got to the final boss and I got wiped. So it's just one of those things of like putting in an hour at a time and hopefully I can manage. But been doing a little bit this week with Bulbasaur. He's pretty close. He's got five achievements left. I've got five achievements left.
Yeah,
So
okay.
hopefully we can get it out of the way. Dredge DLC, there's not really much to say. The game, sorry, the DLC is Pale Reach. It is essentially another area of the map down south. Just icy kind of area where you build like an ice crusher and just collect like I think 10 more fish. Very quick like DLC, 1 to 2 hours, but has the same spirit. It's essentially just more of the same game, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah.
Very easy to knock out of the way, and I believe there is a guide on one of the websites that gives you the direct like areas that you should go to.
Sweet.
But yeah, knocked it out pretty quickly. Should we talk together about Remnant 2?
Yeah, let's do that. So yeah, I guess we were talk I've been I mentioned a little earlier that I've been trying to play just about everything I can just before our Game of the Year discussion, and I realized we totally forgot to get back to Remnant 2. So we
I am very torn right now because Remnant 2 is more of Remnant 1.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very much the same enjoyable experience that we've had, but I haven't played enough yet to go, this is definitely going in the Game of the Year list. I think it has potential at this moment in time. The gunplay is as good as it felt with the original. A lot of the stuff feels like just an upgraded version.
Yeah, looks nicer, plays nicer, sounds better. Like it's a very sequel.
Story's good.
So I mean, yeah, the story's fine.
Yeah.
Like
So I wouldn't say so. It's enjoyable, but
it's better than serviceable, but it's not
yeah.
like, yeah.
Not groundbreaking.
No, it's your pretty standard, like you need to do a bunch of stuff to save the world kind of stuff. Yeah.
I will say though, the best thing for me about Remnant 2 is I've had a few moments where I've just been like, oh, that boss design is really fucking cool. And we've fought two world bosses so far, I believe.
I think 10, yeah, like one major, like so I guess the interesting thing about that game is that it's random every time you play through the campaign. So there are four main worlds that you go to, each of them are random essentially in terms of like which you get there. Each have two versions of it, and you don't know which one you're going to go to and which version you're going to get in what order. So we ended up on, I think it's like the spaceship one was kind of the first one that we started with. And now we're in this like Fey Realm one that's kind of interesting that we just kind of started on a little bit.
So,
Yeah.
oh, I was thinking about the Labyrinth of Worlds. Like the
Oh,
spaceship
there
one.
also, yeah, you're right, the Labyrinth. Yeah, there is also the Labyrinth, yeah.
So, like, just to talk about the spaceship one, we went in there, like, not having any concept of what this boss was doing. It's like one of those, what's the best comparison? Probably like, is it, I don't want to say Crota. What was the original King's Fall Raid in Destiny?
I never
Where,
played Destiny.
okay, there's like original raid. No, it wasn't King's Fall. I'm trying to
Vault of
think of what the
Glass.
real, Bottle Glass, yeah, where it's just like hanging over, I
Yeah, it's a big
believe.
motherfucker, yeah.
Yeah. So very similar to that kind of fight where they just he's got like a orb in his hand that you've got to shoot at to like basically weaken him, but then he pushes it into the like over the side knee and drags everything in. And then I was just like smashing into that with my shotgun class because I'm running essentially a tank with a subclass of the, I don't know, whatever the dog class is. You got a cool little dog right
Yeah.
that you can take along and pet. But it's like that's working well. But yeah, that boss design, we went in the first time, we got wiped, and then we quickly learned what it was, and just very cool aesthetic. And then the labyrinth as well. Like we went in a few times, got crushed, but it was like very easy to pick up on like what we needed to do.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying, like, I'm enjoying the boss fights and kind of, I really enjoy the world design. The moment-to-moment combat is a bit, it's fine, it's good, it's solid, but it's nothing spectacular.
I think the only problem I really have with the game is Remnant 1 was very clear path, like close, not close corridor kind of feel, but like it was much more limited in its world design. But it didn't feel like you were traversing massive maps.
No,
This
this
is,
is much bigger. Yeah.
yeah, this is a much bigger map design, which kind of feels like you're taking quite a bit to get to. Like certain like portals, but at the same time, I'm like it's not bad. It just feels like a little bit more bloaty than the original.
It's definitely a bit more overwhelming. Like when we got to this new world, it was like, man, there's a lot of directions we could go, and we have no idea. Like, because of the level of randomness, and again, like I kind of, if you go back and listen to my review of the first game, my biggest problem with that game was the RNG, was the fact that you never knew what you were going to get when you're going through it. And this game has actually gone more in the randomness direction as opposed to less. And I think it works for the most part, but like the first time you get into an area, I've got like six tabs open looking for like collectibles and stuff because like there's so many variations you could end up in a place. And it's like, fuck me, I need to make sure I don't miss anything from this area because I might not find it again if we re-roll or change something or do something.
Interesting.
And so it's a bit, and it's a game that's meant to be played a lot. Like you're supposed to basically like, re-roll the campaign or at least re-roll like the worlds as adventures, and you can do them like as separate parts.
But the problem with that is too, like a few of the achievements are related to the campaign stuff, and you need to do it on the campaign rather than the
Yeah.
adventure mode.
Exactly, like you can't go to the labyrinth, for example, outside of camp. Like the main four worlds that you go to are re-rollable in adventure, but the sort of in between stuff like the labyrinth and I know like the beginning area and the final area, apparently you won't be able to like re-roll or whatever. But there's just some interesting stuff around. Like, yeah, it feels like a lot.
I will say the two, like the labyrinth, like in the first game, just acted as like an interconnected, like
Yeah.
not hub area, but like it was like you just traverse from one world to the next.
Yeah,
This is a
occasionally.
lot more
It's more of a dungeon, yeah.
dungeon dangerous. Yeah. But like I'm really enjoying the time that we've put into it so far,
Yeah.
to the point that I've messaged you sub like the next night and been like, Remnant? Remnant?
Yeah, I've been so busy with Eastwood, but yeah, it's we're definitely gonna get cracked back into it next week and hopefully get a bit more of it done.
Is there any, oh, and like okay, the one thing I want to gush back is like the ties to the first game, whether it be characters, whether like Chicago Typewriter is fucking amazing. Just going back to those really strong gunplay feels of the original. Yeah, it's just amazing. Like it's definitely one of those games that even if it doesn't hit people's game of the year lists, I still think this is one of the best, if not the best co-op experience that came out this year.
It needs to come to Game Pass like the first one did. I feel like this is yeah, like you need a group of two, group of three to get through it. I really feel like it makes the game so much more interesting.
I do appreciate the fact that they build their clauses around the fact that solo players can get through, though.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And I also like the sort of the changes to the class system, because in the original game, it was like it just kind of dictated your starting abilities, and that was pretty much it. Whereas this kind of is a bit more flexible, like there's level ups for the
class
classes
driven.
themselves, and you can kind of mix and match because you can dual class and stuff. So yeah, really enjoying it.
McNulty said that they picked up the base game of the DLC for $10, which is an absolute steal. Yeah, it's probably like one of those games that I would recommend the most in terms of a co-op experience on Xbox. But yeah, not much else to like. I'm sure we'll gush about it more next week. All right, I'll let you pick, like a Dragon Gaiden or A Space for the Unbound.
Especially the Unbound.
Right, so Space for the Unbound, essentially you're playing as Anima, a teenage boy set in rural Indonesia, and he's got a girlfriend called Rhea. That as you progress through the game, stuff begins to be like much more unhinged. So starting off the game, Atma realizes that he has the ability to dive into people's psyche and like deal with whatever issues that they might have. So there's some like wonderful Easter eggs related to when the past was around in this game with the L and that. In like helping a few musicians like get rid of their blockades, essentially.
Oh, okay.
So Atma is able to essentially use a gameplay mechanic called Space Dive to sort these issues out, and he uses it in like using a red book. Rhea just comes across like an extraordinary power to just change reality and shape it to her own will. And as the game progresses, not going into too much spoilers, but by the end of chapter one, you realize Rhea is like reinventing the world around her to kind of make an idealistic vision of what she thinks the world should be, which like stems into a bit of the dangerous side of it, and then explores mental health and that as the game progresses along, while still having wonderful ties to like being teenagers in rural Indonesia. There's a lot of cultural references. The pixel art style is beautiful, and there's so many heartfelt moments in this game that kind of just like this is an emotionally heavy game, and probably like one of the biggest, like one of the games that probably like made me think the most. There's also like a lot of ties to just like helping solve everyday life issues. The only problem I have with the game is you have to pet 25 pets to unlock a final achievement, and two of the pets I apparently missed, even though I was following the Neo Seeker guide, which kind of robbed me of that particular achievement, so I have to do a complete new playthrough. There's also other stuff, like there's a girl in your dreams that you like took care of originally, and there's a lot of stuff like tied to her. This is very much one of those games that a mystery unravels as it goes along, but the gameplay mechanic, like you think of Cocoon as a gameplay mechanic of like in terms of puzzle, this diving into people's psyches, solving their issues is done so like it done in that same regard, but narratively, and done so well that like I'm not surprised at all that Toji bought Motion. Like I expect that studio to put out some like really amazing stuff.
I'd love to play. This sounds like right up my alley.
This is 100% like one of those games that if it hit Game Pass, everybody would have already jumped on it. The only downside is the missable achievements. Like this is a game that I will gush about for years to come. I really want to have a Game of the Year discussion about this because of like how the ending goes. Because it's like one of those endings in video games that I think more people really need to pay attention to. And I'm kind of mad at myself for like leaving this for like most of the year until I actually played it. because I would have probably been raving on about this for quite a bit.
Might pick up in.
Yeah, definitely recommend it. I believe it's starting to get to the point where it's been in a few sales for like 30% off.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this is, yeah, definitely must recommend. The only other stuff I've been playing is I spent all last weekend playing like a Dragon Gaiden, the man who erased his name. So essentially what this game is, it was originally meant to be DLC, but then it became a standalone game. It's about 20 hours in length. And essentially sets up what's happened after Yakuza 6, Song of Life. Now, I'm not entirely like, if I butcher the story a little bit, I'm sorry. I think I have a strong understanding of the story, but like after what happened in 6, Kiri's essentially gone into hiding. He doesn't want any of his family, like from the orphanage, hurt. And he becomes an agent under the name of Joru and starts doing odd jobs around the town. So essentially what you're doing is like it has a very strong narrative by chapter one, then chapter two and chapter three are doing a whole bunch of like your typical like side mission kind of content, but it's woven in such a way like you have to do 50 side quests to progress onto chapter four. So it is a very much like a side content kind of game, but I never felt like it was entirely side content because the side missions were like all original and impactful. There's a lot of like fetch quests and that kind of stuff, but it's like in
Okay.
terms of a lot terms of this kind of game, like for 20 hours,
Yeah, 20 hours is insane. The
I
fact
got it
that
done in
yeah,
2 days.
it's
Like
nuts.
and
So, does it have a lot more meaning behind the content then, you're finding?
I wouldn't it basically just like fills in it's essentially like a dragon. What's is it's just like a dragon. Yeah, the like a dragon game with Ichiban is essentially just covering up what Kiryu was doing during this time. The entire Song of Life, like a dragon, and Infinite Wealth together,
Gotcha, which is the next one coming out, yeah.
because Infinite Wealth, he ends up on the beach, and at the end of this game it's basically he's going on vacation to take care of
Right.
himself.
Gotcha.
Like that's the ending for this game. But like the events of this game are done so like it was so enjoyable. The only thing I really had a problem with was the one shot mode is very like you get 10 shots to basically like one shot the ball. And normal difficulty was a joke for me. Matt's gonna play this next weekend and just completely prove me wrong, but whatever.
I'm gonna try it.
There was one thing I struggled with. And pretty much half this game is the Colosseum fights, which
Right.
is like you recruit like 4 to 10 allies, and then it's like very just maxing all your stats to taking like just rinse repeat kind of stuff. Definitely recommend when you upgrade your gear to get the golden underwear, that kind of stuff. And yeah, the one shot challenge can fuck right. There's something else that I was annoyed with as well. I think some of the pocket races can be like a little bit annoying if you don't know what you're doing. But it's like one of those things, if you've played a Yakuza game like from before, it's pretty easy to figure out. Fighters just take a long time. And I will say, like, for some people, maybe the chapter 2-3 can kind of drag on a little bit until you get the narrative ending. Because you do get to a point with chapter five, sorry, chapter four, where there's like a point of no return.
Oh, okay, right.
Which I think might, like, as long as you do a save beforehand, you're right. But, like, just, yeah, be careful with that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, really enjoyable. Probably, like, I would say it's my favorite, like, a Dragon game yet, or Yakuza game, whatever you want to call them. Essentially, just because of the length, though. You're not weighed down with like it still has quite a bit of side content, but this is definitely the lightest version we've ever got of it.
Oh, it's on my playlist for sure. I don't know when I'll get to it, but it definitely will
Yeah.
be in some stage.
I definitely want to go back to the other games now, but I know they're going to be grinds. But yeah, that's essentially me for the week. Played a quite a bit.
All right. I guess that leads us into our leaderboards then. So we've got in third place, Professor Pluto, Alex, with 6,523. We've got Mad Eye Paddy with 25,925. And we've got Martel with 59,766. I don't understand how he still has games to play.
Sorry, 59 or 49?
49.
Okay. I swear you said 59.
Sorry, 49,766. I don't understand how he still has games that he can play.
All those horse games.
Yeah, it's just, it's nuts. Keo, do you want to run through our completions?
Yeah, so Firehawk did State of Decay, Pac-Man, and the Ghostly Adventures. So two games there. Mikhail KV did Jedi Fallen Order. Superbob did Stranglehold, the Japanese JP version. Monkeys did Mortal Shell, so that's good too. But Baron von Neumann did Remnant 2, Dungeons 4, and Daylent. I don't know that one. The Moonzom did Alan Wake 2, and Jar hit the 200k gamer score. So,
yeah, congratulations.
Nice.
And then, of course, we have the Word Challenge, everyone's favorite competition. Guest at the last minute by Mr. Logic Dad Isaac, question ask extraordinaire.
Yeah.
So the clues were this game was nominated for multiple IGN Best of Awards the year it was released, which was 2014. Nominated for two Game Awards, which I believe was for Best Art and Best Score. And nominated for Best Music and Best Score by multiple publications. I think Giant Bomb had it on one of theirs. The Game Trailers did. Yeah. It was very well reviewed, but didn't win. It nominated a lot, didn't win a lot of awards.
I've never heard of this game.
Yeah, so this is made by the same people who make Hades and Bastion. So this is what they made after Bastion. Okay. And was a PlayStation 4 exclusive for a while. Never came to Xbox, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was actually given away as a PlayStation Plus at one point. I might actually have it. I should play it.
Yeah, really cool. Really, really cool game. Love the art and the music, obviously. Gameplay-wise, is interesting too. Has a kind of an interesting mix between turn-based and action RPG. So congratulations to Isaac for guessing Transistor. Definitely, it's on most other platforms. I believe it's on PC. It's on like Apple.
It's on an 80% off sale on Steam at the moment. So $5.99.
Definitely worth checking out. Really, really cool. So really enjoy that. I mean, if you enjoy Bastion, if you enjoy Hades, that kind of style, it is kind of sort of similar idea. Not so much like Pyre, though, the other thing they did, which is very strange. Congratulations. We'll probably have a new one, maybe not next week, but the week after. We'll see how. I'll see if I can come up with a new one for next week. Patreon, Cameron, you want to?
Let me go. All right, so we've got Lee Howard, Mikhail KV, Natalita, Mad Lefty 2097, Admiral Awesome, Heavy Moogles, Kung Fu Skills, Hack of Pone, Cavalier 07, Old Me Clown. Mark Beat, McLovin Legend, Message, Left 4 Legacy, and Nick Nolte.
Thank you very much, guys. Those are our amazing patrons who basically help us keep the show running by paying the bills, keeping the lights on, paying for competitions and hosting and all that kind of stuff. If you want to help support the show, patreon.com/hallofgamers is a place to find us. Any amount helps us. We put the money directly back into the show. So thank you so much. And that's pretty much going to bring us into the show. You guys, Keo, do you want to shill something? What do you got going on?
Yeah, I've been streaming again. So I've been hitting that pretty hard and will be hitting it hard for a good while, as much as I can. So I finished off Lies of P on stream this week. It took a few runs. Last time, my second to last stream of that was a bit of a problem because the servers for Restream, I think, were having issues and I had to cut it short. But I went in back in and just did the final boss fight and then moved on and did some Hitman. So I've got Hitman on the background of the stream at the moment. I've been doing quite a bit of that on one. I might do another stream of that maybe, but I'll be looking at moving on to a couple of other games next week. That's at Keo Live at Home on Twitch. You can catch the notifications for that at Keo Live at Home on Twitter. And you can catch the VODs for that at HDFG Play on YouTube.
Fantastic. Cameron, what about you?
I don't know. I'm probably not going to be streaming. Like, I'm settling into the new job kind of stuff, finding my feet. If I do stream, you know, just Shadow Say You. But yeah, the other thing is I'm pretty much just trying to smash through as much Game of the Year content so we can really discuss it for some spoiler casts.
For sure. I'm pretty much in the same boat, near master on everything, True Achievements, Xbox, and Discord as always. But yeah, I'm head down trying to get through as many games as possible before the inevitable end of the year, which is coming up very quickly. We are literally 1 month away from Christmas. As always,
Jeez.
come hang out with us on the Twitch, Xbox All Gamers place to find us. Otherwise, Discord is the best place to hang out with our community, ask questions, ship post. Talk about the podcast. We see all our notifications there. Any new content, and if you join the Patreon, we do a bit of pre and post show that I put together out there each week. Some behind the scenes content and any kind of extra stuff like spoiler casts or songs or anything that we do will come up on there, either exclusively or at the very least for a good long while exclusively to Patreon. Well, that's going to be episode 102. We will catch you guys next week. See you later.
Hi, everyone.
Peace out.